Spotify, AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
Well, his books are The Presence of the Past, Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home. We sure have talked about that one, huh? And The Sense of Being Stared At. An entire book about the sense of being stared at. And I think that's where I want to begin. Rupert, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi there. Where are you?
I'm in London right now.
In London?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm getting a better connection with you all the way in London, Rupert, than I had with somebody on a cell phone a little while ago. That's amazing. All right, listen, you wrote a book about the sense of being stared at, which, you know, for a minute it sounds silly until you stop and think about it a little bit. It's not so silly at all. Somehow, when we're in a room, we do know when somebody is staring at us, there is some sixth sense, and I wonder if that's what you call it, a sixth sense, that allows us to know when we're being stared at. What's that all about?
Well, the book actually is about that and a range of other phenomena of the extended mind. And I think what's important about the sense of being stared at is, first of all, that it's very common. Secondly, it happens in animals as well. I think it's a basic biological thing. Thirdly, I think it has an evolutionary background. I think it's to do with predator-prey relationships.
Yes.
A prey animal that can tell when a predator's looking at it,
yes,
would escape better. But above all, it has huge implications for the way we understand the nature of the mind. So what I've been doing is partly checking out just how common is this feeling, the sense of being stared at. And it turns out to be extremely common. I mean, over 90% of people have had this.
Yes.
It's very, very widespread all around the world. And then I've done lots of experiments. I've got some very simple experiments to test for it. These experiments are ones that can be done at home by people working in pairs. They can be done in schools. And in fact, thousands of them have been done in schools in the US and in Britain and in Germany. So there's now, I think, overwhelming evidence that this is for real, this sense. It's not just a coincidence, an illusion, just remembering when you're right, forgetting when you're wrong.
I absolutely agree with you, Rupert, but I have a question. While we know about the sense of being stared at, imagine a scenario where a bad guy is standing hiding behind a door with a baseball bat, waiting for you to walk through the door to bash you over the head with a baseball bat. Now, the man's intention who's waiting is to be hidden. The man's intention who's waiting is to not allow you to know that he's waiting to kill you. And could it be that in the cases where it's successful and the person doesn't know they walk through the door and get killed, the reason the person didn't know this was coming or even sense it or have the hairs on the back of their neck stand up was because the intent of the person that was waiting for them was to remain hidden?
Well, I think there's a difference between people who remain hidden and people who have practiced special techniques to be sort of psychically invisible. Regular hiding, usually if people are hiding, they're usually peeping or looking because they want to see if someone's coming.
Yes.
And there's a very interesting case that I report in my book, a woman in the United States who had a very similar situation to this. She was getting out of her car park at car at night in a parking lot, heading towards the door of her apartment block. And she just felt really uneasy. She felt something bad was going to happen. She looked around and she couldn't see anyone. She looked everywhere and she felt someone was looking at her. She felt someone had some intention, but she couldn't see them. So she went to the door of the apartment block, and she just was there getting her keys when this guy appeared out of the dark, exposed himself in a very offensive way. And she sort of, because she was prepared for something happening, she very quickly ran off, got inside, closed the door, and ran upstairs. But she'd had this feeling from someone who was hidden, and she'd looked around to try and see where it was coming from. So I think it can give a warning in cases like that as well.
So it can work either way. So we don't really then yet understand what kind of communication is going on here, apparently, Rupert, or if there's any communication, or if there's any transmission, or if this is just two atoms doing the same thing at the same time in this great non-locality that the remote viewers talk about.
Well, I think that's going too far. That's taking a sledgehammer to crack a peanut, going to right over to quantum non-locality, I think, because what this thing is, first of all, it's quite local in the sense that usually if someone's staring at you, you can tell the direction. Usually when people swing around because they're
true.
Being watched, they swing around and usually meet the eyes pretty well straight away.
Right.
They feel the direction, so it's directional. It's not just a kind of nebulous feeling you're being looked at. It has a directional component. I once was convinced, the first time I was really convinced of this, I was on the seventh floor of a hotel, and I was gazing out of the window. There were a couple of women walking down below, and I was just watching them. And then they stopped, and one of them swung round and looked straight up at the seventh floor window where I was watching from. And they couldn't possibly have known that there was somebody watching from there. But they not only picked up, this woman picked up the direction, she picked up she was being watched, not just the direction, but it was up as well as behind.
All right, well, that's extremely interesting and simple on the face of it, but when you get down to trying to explain what actually might be happening here, then it gets very complicated, doesn't it?
Well, it gets sort of complicated, but the interesting thing about it is that it ties in with normal vision, you know, the way we just see things on a regular basis. Right now, I've got my eyes open. It's daylight here in London, looking out of the window at a tree. Now, the normal theory of vision is that when you look at things, light comes in your eye, inverted images on the retina, changes in the optic nerve and in the brain, and then somehow the visual world we all experience is supposed to spring into being inside our heads. It's all meant to be a kind of virtual reality display inside the brain.
Right.
But what I'm suggesting is an idea that it's so simple it's rather hard to understand, which is that vision's a two-way process. Light comes in, all these changes happen in the brain as described, but then the visual world you see is actually projected out to where it seems to be. So my image of the tree I'm looking at isn't in my brain. It's outside me where the tree is. So, excuse me. So the projection out of visual images is, I think, the way our normal vision works. That means that it works through a field, what I call a perceptual field, which is a kind of morphic field, which I could come back to later. But it's a field phenomenon, so I'm projecting the image out in a field. The image normally overlaps with what I'm looking at, and therefore my field of attention is touching what I'm looking at. And I think it's precisely because when you look at somebody, your field of attention touches them, it reaches out beyond the brain and touches them, that people can detect that. And I think that's why we get the sense of being stared at.
Okay, well, you're quite correct. I understand, certainly, the way the visual aspect of it works, but I don't understand how that becomes extended to, obviously, beyond what you can visually see. That's the part I'm not grasping.
Well, the sense of being stared at only works with what you can visually see. We're not talking here about telepathy, which goes beyond what you can see, but the sense of being stared at, I think, is a distinct phenomenon from telepathy. It's based on what you can actually see. If you're staring at somebody and they turn round, you've got to be able to see them for this particular phenomenon to happen. So it is based on what you can see and what you're looking at.
Okay, but I'm still stumbling over this. In other words, the person who has the sense,
yeah,
there's nothing visually cluing them in that somebody's staring at them. Nothing in their visual range telling them.
Oh,
that.
I see what you mean. That if you're looking from behind.
Yes.
Well, oh yes, I didn't explain that very well. What I think's happening is that if I'm looking at you, then, which of course I can't because we're thousands of miles apart, but if we were in the same room and I was looking at your back,
yes,
my visual field would be projecting out and touching you. It would be sort of overlapping with you. I'd be projecting my image of you onto where you are. Now, I think the reason you can detect that is because you also have a field around you. We have a field of awareness, not just of what we can see in front of us, but we're aware of what's going on behind us too, through the sense of hearing and through other senses. So we have a kind of field around us of awareness. And I think that my field interacts with your field, and the two, you then pick up with the field around your body that there's a field of someone's attention directed at you.
Yes, that's a very interesting theory, that there's a field there, and I can almost buy it, but, you know, is there any way to quantify it, to measure it, to understand what actual forces are at work that create these fields?
Well, I think there could be in the long run. I mean, what we're talking about here is, first of all, there's evidence the sense of being stared at really happens. Huge amount of evidence. Something's really happening here.
I agree. Oh.
Secondly, it's not something you can explain in terms of the regular senses, because this works even through plate glass windows, one-way mirrors, where you can rule out all the normal sensory clues.
Right.
So, thirdly, the only way we can explain a kind of action at a distance in science is through some kind of field phenomenon. So it's more or less got to be some kind of field. The only question is what kind. Now, it's not one of the known kinds of fields, like the electromagnetic, gravitational, or quantum fields. Or, well, it could be a quantum field, but if so, it's working in a different way from the way quantum physicists usually think of them. And I think it's this other kind of field, a morphic field. But the key thing is that there's a field phenomenon here going on. There's evidence that it's really happening. Exactly how it happens, we don't know. I mean, this isn't, you know, when people first started working on magnetic and electrical fields, when Faraday was trying to work out what fields were in the 1840s, he didn't know what they were made of, how they worked, what the maths of them was, or
That's
anything
right.
like that.
Right.
He had to start off with a theory of fields, which wasn't yet worked out mathematically. Maxwell worked out the maths of electromagnetic fields 20 years later. Then Einstein showed Maxwell's theory based on the ether was, you know, you didn't need the ether. So he changed it all about another 40 or 50 years later. Then we got quantum theory as well. So it took a long time for our existing understanding of fields to build up. And I think that we're dealing here with a field concept that is a much earlier stage of development. So we don't yet have all the mathematics, all the details that we might have.
Do you know if there is any serious scientific work being done to try and detect, measure, or quantify in some way these fields? Is there any hard science being done in that kind of area?
Well, depends what you call hard science. I mean, there's a lot of work being done on detecting the fields. I do it myself. You know, the way you detect these fields is through their effects. The way you detect any field is through its effects. You never see it directly. You know, the way you detect a gravitational field is through its effects on pulling things.
Correct.
The way you detect an electromagnetic field is through electrical or magnetic effects.
Right.
You don't detect
right.
it through
right.
gravitational effects.
Mm-hmm.
The way you detect quantum fields is through quantum effects. The way you detect perceptual fields is through perceptual effects. All fields are detected through their effects. And there's no reason to suppose that you should be able to detect any field with an electrical meter. You detect electrical fields with electrical meters, but you don't detect gravitational fields with electrical meters. You detect them with pendulums and weights and that kind of thing.
But you don't think this is quantum related, you know, that...
Well, I think it's quantum related. But this is, I mean, you're going right to the heart of this, I must say. You're,
yes.
You know, you're asking all the most difficult questions.
Well, yes, that's what I do.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, that's fair enough. But, I mean, we're plunging straight in here. I think it is related to quantum theory, but exactly how isn't clear, because quantum theory works fine if you're dealing with small systems like hydrogen atoms. But even by the time you get big molecules like proteins or crystals, quantum theory is much too complicated. You have to deal with a whole lot of approximations. And it's very... No one really knows how much quantum theory is involved in the functioning of a living cell or a brain. I mean, there are theories about it, but they're mostly speculative, and it goes way beyond the kind of rigorous physics of quantum theory.
Except right now, it's the only thing that we really know a little bit about that would begin to explain it, it seems like.
Well, yes, but what I prefer to do is to investigate these fields and how they work and leave open the question of how they're related to quantum theory, because saying it's related to quantum theory doesn't really help us that much.
All right.
There's so many books out there, you know, quantum medicine, quantum physics,
yes.
quantum cello playing, quantum beauty care and stuff. I mean, there's quantum everything, and it's become a kind of rather empty catchword, I think.
All right. Is there any way to measure the size of these fields? Do they vary in size? Are they endless? Certainly I'm not aware of somebody staring at me from some incredible distance, so there has to be the field must be measurable almost.
Oh, I think it's measurable. The fact that people can tell when they're being looked at is the way you detect it. Can someone tell? You know, I have simple tests for this. And it's a frequency thing. You know, some people are better at it than others. But, yes, you can measure them. But then the question of distance. If somebody's so far away you can't see them, then it's not going to work.
Right.
But then you can look at them through a telescope or through binoculars. That's been done, and there's already evidence that they work through devices for extending your vision, like telescopes or binoculars. And so they certainly work at a distance, but that's still within the range of extended vision through visual aids, like telescopes. A really fascinating question arises is, does this work through television? And there's been a series of experiments by a number of parapsychologists, and it's a kind of parallel strand of research to my own, which is all on direct looking. But by parapsychologists, there's been these experiments where people are looked at through closed circuit television.
Yes.
You're sitting in one room, there's a TV camera pointing at you.
Yes.
And then somebody in another room is looking at you on a TV monitor.
And what has that proven?
And what that's proved, interestingly enough, is that people can tell when someone's looking at their image on a TV screen in another room. And in those experiments, in my experiments, people just guess. It's very simple to do. These are more complicated and sophisticated, the closed-circuit television experiments.
Oh, they certainly are. Hold on. We're here at the bottom of the hour, Rupert, so just hold tight for a moment. So it even works over a closed-circuit type arrangement. I wonder what that tells us about the field and the whole thing. What does that tell us? That you don't have to be there physically. Fascinating.
KFI News. News on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks.
I'm Lisa Osborne in the KFI News Center. L.A. Sheriff's deputies are looking into how two women and a boy died in Whittier. Sheriff spokesman Scott Gage says the victim's apartment was on fire.
The female victims were pronounced dead at the scene. The child was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead.
A fire official says one woman died from a gunshot wound. The deaths are reportedly being investigated as a murder-suicide. The center of what is now Tropical Storm Frances is over the Gulf of Mexico after cutting across Florida. Residents of four counties in the Florida Panhandle have been ordered to evacuate. Over 13 inches of rain fell along Florida's central east coast, flooding some areas 4 feet deep. Millions remain without power. Two people were killed from Frances. Another hurricane may be on its way toward Florida. Ivan is picking up steam in the Atlantic about 2,400 miles southeast of the state.
It's located almost 1,000 miles east of the Windward Islands, so it's still a good ways out in the Atlantic, and it's moving off to the west at about 21 miles per hour right now. The winds are about 115 miles per hour.
National Weather Service meteorologist Park Camp says it'll hit the Bahamas by Friday, but he says it's too soon to tell if Ivan will reach Florida. The Far East is also experiencing the apparent wrath of Mother Nature. Strong aftershocks have rattled western Japan after two powerful earthquakes injured almost 40 people. The shakers were centered far off the coast but rocked Osaka and Kyoto and caused buildings to sway in Tokyo. Also, a powerful typhoon has hit Japan's southern islands. More than 20 people have been hurt. Officials say it could bring heavy rain and mudslides to the areas affected by the quakes. It's 11:31. I'm Lisa Osborne in the KFI News Center.
Traffic presented by Lexus Dealers. And I'm Dave Jarina in the KFI Traffic Center, Woodland Hills 101 West before DeSoto. Mattress and other debris taking up the two left lanes. You want to stay to the right side. Alhambra 10 East at New Avenue. Spin out crash there, blocking the right lane. Car lost control. It's still slow from Atlantic. Seal Beach 405 South 605 wrapping up two separate collisions there. Had traffic slow to Bellflower. It is starting to open up. Want the best oil change? Visit Easy Lube today. National Operators of the Year. Over 50 convenient Easy Lube locations. Why not visit one of the three Easy Lube locations in Costa Mesa? Easy Lube. It's a hard road. They make it easy. For Lexus dealers, I'm Dave Jarina in the KFI Traffic Center.
Experience the passion.
And here comes the Kerry campaign now with the first Republican 527. Out there, whoa, not there, they're colluding with Bush, and they're not.
Sacrificing a single high-powered congressman is not going to change the balance of power in the House. One of these five has got to go. The head has got to roll.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating.
Talk radio.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add him to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
Happy holiday from KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, and the folks at your Mercedes-Benz dealers here in Southern California. We'd like to remind all of you to drive safely during this Labor Day holiday season. If you're drinking, please designate a driver. By acting responsibly, you'll make a difference and help to save lives. KFI AM 640 and your Mercedes-Benz dealers of Southern California care about our community. We sincerely hope that you do too. Have a very happy Labor Day holiday.
Hello?
Good morning!
Who is this?
It's Dan from Del Taco with a 69-cent breakfast burrito wake-up call.
It's 5:45 in the morning.
Well, that's right, sir. Del Taco's already serving breakfast, and a 69-cent breakfast burrito is a great way to get you going in the morning. Think about it. Hot scrambled eggs, melted cheddar cheese and red sauce, wrapped in a warm flour tortilla.
Listen, I'm very tired, so I'm hanging up.
No, come on. Doesn't a 69-cent breakfast burrito sound delicious?
I just want to get some sleep.
Well, sounds like somebody woke up on the wrong side of the bed, huh?
Yeah, exactly, because you woke me up.
Good morning.
Oh, my gosh, you just called me.
Goodbye.
Not up in time for breakfast? Try our deluxe chili cheddar fries. Golden crinkle-cut fries smothered in hot red chili, melted cheddar cheese, tomatoes, onions, and sour cream. Only at Del Taco. Breakfast hours, price, and participation may vary.
The real thing.
Rush Limbaugh, tomorrow, 9 to noon, KFI AM 640.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903.
Rupert Sheldrake is my guest. We're talking about things that, well, it's kind of an extension of last night's program and the whole mass consciousness thing that we've been on to now for so long. That may account for why I went so directly to the center of all of this. Rupert Sheldrake, right back.
This is KFI.
Hey, and investors, would you like to know how to make 100, 200, even 300% profit in your savings and retirement accounts? Do you know which investment experts say could make that happen? Gold! James Turk, well-known economist and gold expert, recently told Barron's magazine that a weak dollar and rising budget deficits could push gold over $1,500. That's 300% higher than where it trades today. And history agrees. Last time interest rates began to rise from these levels, gold rose more than 2,000%. Are you ready to take advantage? If you want to know more, call the experts I trust with my gold investing, Lear Financial, at 1-800-474-4259. Ask for your free gold profit guide and learn how even a small investment into gold today could turn into a huge savings and retirement nest egg. Call 1-800-474-4259 now, and you'll also receive the special audio, The Gold Boom Ahead, a $29 value. The gold guide and the audio tape are free, no obligation. Call 1-800-474-4259. That's 800-474-4259. 800-474-4259.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO. 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Maybe you think it's normal. Or you're afraid they'll push you away. Maybe you tried pot too and you feel like a hypocrite.
Sweetie,
whatever the excuse, get over it. Because if your kid smokes pot now, they're at risk for serious problems later. Okay. So be the parent. Say something.
We need to talk. Now.
To help them with their problem, first you have to get over yours. Action. The Anti-Drug.
For more information, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
KFI AM 640.
Cambridge, PhD in biochemistry at Cambridge, fellow, of course. You know, it's really Dr. or Professor Rupert Sheldrake, actually. Professor, welcome back to the program.
Hello.
Professor, you know, this program that I do on the weekends and then is done during the week by George, every night we talk about things very much like this, and what I've noted is, with what's going on at Princeton University and people like Stephen Schwartz, people like yourself and so many others now, there is a shift in science that's beginning to occur, and it looks like it's going to be a big shift, and it looks like it's going to be to the kinds of areas that you're investigating right now. It hasn't happened yet, but I bet it's like next or maybe the thing after that, but it's about to be a really big thing, isn't it?
Oh, I think so, yes. I mean, there's been a taboo against inquiry into these kind of things within the scientific world for a long time, a kind of dogmatic attitude that basically everything, all the minds inside the brain, none of these other things are possible and so on. That's getting much weaker. There are still militant skeptics who dogmatically defend the standard point of view, but they're getting less and less credible, and this was shown up clearly in London in a debate I took part in earlier this year with one of Britain's leading skeptics, and it turned out he was completely ignorant of almost all the recent evidence for these things, even the older evidence, and it was really just a position of prejudice. I think as people realize it's a prejudice that these areas that are opening up are really exciting and really important and leading us to a completely different understanding of ourselves and of our brains.
Yes, well, skeptics are a very strange group indeed, and if you present them with new evidence, I know you're in the business of evidence because of the experiments you've done, they generally say, well, you know, I haven't heard about that, and you're going to have to prove that to me. I'll take that under advisement. They don't really want to hear about it.
No, they don't. And that was very, very clear in my debate with the skeptic Professor Lewis Wolpert, who, when I actually showed evidence in my debate, I showed videos of experiments. he was sitting on the platform and quite ostentatiously turned his eyes away from the screen and tapped a pencil on the table looking bored. But that was in front of a huge hall full of people, and so everybody could see, and of course that didn't go over well, this deliberate avoidance of the evidence.
Yes, well, Professor, on American television, and I can't remember the name of the program, but it was one of the magazine shows, the big ones, like 2020 or something like that, and they had, they showed the experiments with these dogs. And they would, they put a camera on the dog in the house, and the owner would be away at work, and they would start the owner coming home early at an unexpected time, and I'll be damned, but every time that dog, every time the owner would start home, the dog would start agitating, jumping at the door. That dog knew the owner was coming home. Now, those are some of your experiments, aren't they?
They are, yes. Yes, I've done a lot of work with animals, and one reason I've worked with animals a lot is because I think in terms of things like telepathy, they're much better than people. Oh. They're more sensitive. They haven't been educated to believe it doesn't happen. Good. And also you get quite repeatable results. When it comes to things like telepathy, a lot of the human research has been with rather boring tasks. The classic ones were guessing meaningless cards that someone else was looking at. And people get bored with those, and the scores fall off. But when it's a question of a dog knowing when its owner's coming home, luckily dogs never get bored with their owners coming home, so they go on anticipating it over and over again. So you can do really repeatable experiments that give extremely clear-cut positive results.
Well, Professor, how do they know?
Well, I think that how the dogs know is an example of telepathy. And the reason I say that is because we tested all the ordinary things, like routines. Is it just a routine time? No, because we've had people come home at non-routine times, at randomly chosen times.
Yes.
I page them on a pager at randomly chosen times to go home. Is it hearing or smelling the person? Well, no, because we have them at least 5 miles away.
Sure.
And is it the car? No, because we've had people come home in taxis and unfamiliar cars. It still works. Is it the people at home? No, because they don't know when the person's coming in. In some experiments, we have no one at home. There's nobody there, just a camera filming the dog.
All right, these are obviously very well-constructed random experiments and with random nature built into them of the coming home. And so you can't deny it. In what percentage, Professor, of the experiments, is there proof that the dog is aware the owner's on the way home?
Well, with the dog I've worked with most, which is a British dog called JT,
yes.
We've done about 300 tests with JT.
Yes.
We film them so that we know exactly when the dog starts waiting. On about 85% of the occasions, the dog goes and waits. Doesn't just start any old time, it starts when the owner decides to come home. So it's responding to her intention even before she's got in the car or taxi.
Wow.
Now, about 15% of cases, the dog didn't respond. And most of those were cases when there was a bitch on heat in the next apartment. So there were some when it was sick, some when it was very tired. So it's, you know, this is not a machine, it's a dog, and it can be distracted. I mean, bitches on heat capture its attention. So,
yes.
But only 15% did it fail. If you add in all the results together, including the ones where it failed, you still get a hugely significant overall positive effect.
And you believe that is telepathy.
Well, that's the only possible explanation. I mean, it seems to be the dog's responding to the owner's intentions from a distance of at least 5 miles, and in some cases 40 or 50. There's no other possible explanation. Skeptics tested this dog at my invitation and got the same results. Robust, repeatable effect.
Yes, and what was the skeptic's reaction?
Oh, well, they didn't believe their own results, and they tried to say that the dog couldn't do it. But when you plot their results on the graph, they show exactly the same pattern as my own. But
how can they possibly deny evidence of this magnitude?
Well, that's a puzzle to me. If you've got people who think they know the truth, and, you know, completely dogmatic in their how they actually did it in this case. And anyone who's interested in the details of the controversy can read all the papers on my website. How they did it was, they said that the dog, when the owner's out, sometimes the dog goes to the window to look out of the window when it's not waiting, and we monitor all that, and the dog's usually at the window about 1 or 2% of the time when she's not coming home. And when you see the videos, it's obvious it's just looking, it's not waiting. In their experiments too, it was at the window 2 or 3% of the time when she wasn't coming home, and in their experiments it was at the window 78% of the time when she was coming home, so there was a huge difference.
Yes.
But what they said is the dog went to the window before she was coming home, therefore it was a false alarm, and therefore all the rest of the data after that false alarm could be discarded and were irrelevant because the dog's already failed the test.
Well, you said you were involved in the experiments in that you would page the person who was to be then instructed to make their way home. Is there any way that you could rule out and did rule out your intention as part of the experiment? And rule out the fact that it was not your intention that began the dog's routine?
Well, I think, there's several ways that one could, that's an ingenious suggestion. I was 200 miles away. I picked the time at random to page her.
Yes.
It's possible you could say the dog was telepathically responding to my intention to call her, to tell her to go home.
Yes.
It's a pretty implausible when you consider the dog's on a daily basis responding to his owner and not to me. The other thing is that when she went out, we also monitored kind of real-life situations where she'd go out for the day. She wouldn't know when she was coming home. She'd visit friends. She'd go shopping. She didn't have any clear plan. There was no one paging her then, but when she decided to go home, she noted down the time, and we were monitoring the dog all the time. The dog was responding when it was just her intention, when I wasn't involved at all, on a regular daily basis.
Okay.
So I think it would be very unlikely that on the occasions I was involved, through paging her, it was responding to me rather than her.
Yes,
and dogs, after all, normally respond to only to one or two people, the people they're closest to. And although I know the dog, it's not particularly close to me.
The reason that I asked the question was because of the Princeton experiments and the graph 4 hours prior to 9/11. There was this gigantic spike 4 hours before 9/11 are you aware, I'm sure you are, of what the work going on at Princeton? And that would seem to indicate there's some element of time involved. I mean, how can there an intention be recognized prior to an event? Unless, say, it was looking at the intent of the people who are going to destroy those buildings.
I doubt if it was the intent in that case. So I don't think that you get a mass consciousness response to someone's intent. My own view is that these effects are more precognitive.
Uh-huh.
I think precognition and premonitions really happen. And the reason I say that is because I studied them in quite some detail in people and in animals. With animals, I'm convinced this can happen in relation to earthquakes. There's innumerable cases of dogs, cats, and other animals getting anxious or excited hours, even days before major earthquakes. I've tracked all the major earthquakes in the last 20 years, and this has been the case in practically all of them.
Oh, well, a very interesting man in California, Jim Berkland, uses the lost dog and cat columns in the newspaper as one of the predictive elements for his great success in predicting earthquakes.
Well, I know. We checked up. I and David Brown, who works with me in California, we've talked to Jim Berkland, and we tried to see how general his case was. And David went through the archives of the San Jose Mercury, which was one of the papers that Jim Berkland works with.
Mm-hmm.
We found that for one earthquake, this seemed to work, but it didn't seem to be very good correlation for other ones. We couldn't confirm it on a line, over a series of earthquakes.
I see.
So I'm not sure that it's that reliable a method, partly because it's such a blunt way of measuring things, lost dogs and cats.
Yes.
I mean, it's an ingenious idea. I wanted Birkland's theory to be true and to be generally applicable, but we couldn't really confirm it. I think in one case it worked, but it's not a very reliable method. A much more reliable method for California would be to have a free phone number, say a 1-800 number, 1-800-PET-QUAKE, and have people ring in if they notice unusual behavior in their pets. You can do it with an internet site as well. So it would be quite possible, by involving large numbers of people, to get a very good tracking of animal behavior on an ongoing basis. It wouldn't cost much, and I think it could be really effective.
What a very interesting idea. Very interesting idea. 1-800 my pet's nervous or something.
Pet quake,
there you go.
But I think if it worked in California, then people could do it in Greece and Turkey and Japan, all sorts of earthquake-prone areas. But the reason I got onto this is because I think premonitions, precognitions, or however the earthquake thing works, it's paralleled in animals with avalanche warnings in the Alps. It's paralleled by dogs and cats anticipating air raids during the Second World War in both Britain and Germany. It's not just physical things that could possibly have a physical explanation. And I think that when you have major catastrophes like 9/11, the possibility of there being precognition is definitely there. And in fact, soon after the 9/11 disaster, I ran a series of ads in New York, in Union Square, and in the Village Voice newspaper, to find out if people had had precognitive dreams about it, because it's such a dramatic event. If precognition is going to work for anything, it should work for that. And I've got dozens and dozens of these. I summarize them in my book, The Sense of Being Stared At.
But and you don't feel that they're somewhat suspect? I mean, people love to make claims about things that happened that they claim afterwards they knew were, was going to happen without documentation thereof, so...
Well, the ones that I take most seriously are ones where there are independent witnesses, where people told their dreams to somebody else first.
That would be good, yes.
A lot of people who had these dreams, they were so dramatic, so unusual. I mean, one I quote in my book was from a forensic scientist who's a skeptic. You know, he said he was very reluctant to write to me about it, but he just couldn't get it out of his mind. He had this dramatic dream of flying low into New York in a plane that was heading over southern Manhattan, and he knew it wasn't on a normal flight path. He got an increasing sense of dread and foreboding, and then he could see it going towards buildings, in fact, where the World Trade Center is. And he woke up with such a shock and so disturbed, he told his wife, and for several days afterwards was really perturbed by this, and then 9/11 happened. He worked just a few blocks from the World Trade Center. So here was a guy who had something very unusual, didn't normally have these things, told somebody else, was a scientist and a skeptic, had no reason to claim this. He was very uncomfortable with the whole thing happening because it went against his worldview.
And has his worldview changed?
Well, I don't know. I haven't asked him since. But, you know, usually what happens to people when this happens is they say, well, that's a funny thing. And then, you know, a few weeks later, it's more or less business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know in his case whether this has what's happened, but I think that these cases of precognitions or precognitive dreams, some of them were so vivid and some of them were independently witnessed. I think it's not just people making it up, but you know, the best way to monitor this kind of thing would be through phenomena like earthquakes, and that's why I think that using animals, which are more sensitive than people, and documenting people's calls would be an excellent way of doing this kind of research.
Well, Professor, we now have this wonderful tool called the Internet, and it seems to me the Internet would be an opportunity for people to record these traumatic events and then have some sort of proof that they were absolutely correct. And there's, I'm sure there are places on the Internet where these things can be recorded, are there not?
Well, I think this, for years there's been a precognition registry where people can record their precognitions It's not a very well-known site. In fact, I don't know what it is myself. But unless you have something that lots of people know about, you're not going to get a very good readout. And that's why I think earthquakes would be such a good thing, because they're of such immediate concern in earthquake-prone areas like California. And they're so dramatic when they happen. As I'm talking, of course, of big earthquakes, not the little ones that happen all the time. I think that would be a really, really good way to do this. And because it's of practical importance and could save lives, you know, it would be an excellent research project for testing out premonition on a large scale.
And would complement your experiments now. So you would be a logical person to perhaps organize something like that. Have you given it some thought?
I have, but since I live in London, England, it's not something that I can easily do, you know, from a huge distance. I think it's better for someone who lives in California to do it. And this is something which my colleague David Brown is thinking of taking up and may be doing in the next few months, getting something of this kind launched.
All right.
So I'm hoping he does, because I think this would be such an interesting project.
It sure would. All right, Professor, hold on. Perhaps somebody in California will take up this challenge. A sort of central point where precognitive dreams of earthquakes are registered. Heaven knows I get emails and phone calls all the time about instances of precognition. And I don't know a lot about precognition, except that I had one unquestionable, shocking, absolutely full piece of precognition in my life. Only one, and I've never been able to repeat it. We'll be right back.
Hot price on motor oil? Get to AutoZone today, where you'll find Valvoline all-climate motor oil for the super low price of just $1.49 a quart. And for a limited time, when you buy 12 quarts of select Valvoline motor oil at AutoZone, you can get up to $10 back in free gasoline by mail-in rebate. See store for details. But hurry, deals this hot won't last long. So get to AutoZone today.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
At 11:10 Central tomorrow on Lifetime.
The smell.
Greasy. Revolting.
It is like a filthy, dirty pickle.
Finally, a show that really stinks. How Clean Is Your House? Starring Britain's Duchesses of Clean, Kim and Aggie.
Oh, I've got to be sick.
They'll take you inside the most terrifying homes on Earth for a transformation that is out of this world.
Smashing.
How Clean Is Your House? Premiering at 11:10 Central tomorrow, only on Lifetime.
That's disgusting.
Why would you pay about $24 a month for AOL dial-up for your computer, for your connection to the Internet, when you can get DSL Extreme DSL service for $26.95 a month, a couple of bucks a month more? And the difference is night and day. With DSL, you don't wait for anything. You don't wait to dial in. You don't wait for the downloads. I mean, they're virtually instantaneous. It's an astonishing way of using the computer. If you ever use DSL, you can see the difference instantly. And with DSL Extreme, you get all the bells and whistles. You don't tie up the phone lines. You get a great spam protection. There's no setup fee. The modem is free, 24-hour free tech support, 10 email addresses, 10 website, no pop-up ads, banner ads, no unwanted emails because of the spam protection. I've been using DSL Extreme, my office, for 4.5 years now, my home for 1.5 years. DSL Extreme, boy, what a way to go. $26.95 a month. I mean, how do you beat that? DSLExtreme.com on the net. Call them at 866-2-GET-NET. 866-2-GET-NET.
Major central story to the day. Nothing about the illegal immigration from Mexico causing this problem? And, I mean, it's just...
Experience the emotion.
Southern California's KFI.
Los Angeles.
News on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks.
Drunk driving arrests are up, but deaths are down on Southland roads this holiday weekend. I'm Lisa Osborne. This is the Midnight News on KFI. Fewer people in L.A. County have been killed on freeways this Labor Day weekend than last year.
We've had 2 people killed, unfortunately, in traffic collisions as compared to 4 last year, so that's good news.
But Highway Patrol spokesman Carlo Quintero says more people across the state have been killed compared to this time last year.
We've had 22 people killed statewide versus 14 of last year.
He says almost 1,000 people across California have been busted for drunk driving. 194 of those arrests came in L.A. County. KFI is the talk station with the most frequent traffic reports presented by Lexus dealers. Mark Helmer's in the KFI Traffic Center.
Silmar 5 North before the 405, a car and a pickup truck have both hit the center divider. East Los Angeles 10 East at 6th Street. Look for a lot of police activity. Someone there is considering suicide. And Long Beach 405 South at Lakewood Boulevard, a vehicle over the side. This traffic report is brought to you by the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers host the Arizona Diamondbacks Tuesday and Wednesday at 7:10 p.m. Don't miss the action. Log on to Dodgers.com or call 323-224-1-HIT. For tickets, I'm Mark Helmer in the KFI Lexus Dealers Traffic Center.
KFI News Time 1201. Tropical Storm Frances is churning its way into the Gulf of Mexico, leaving two people dead in its wake and about 5 million customers without power. KFI Fox News reporter Adam Housley is on the state's east coast.
There is flooding still in low-lying areas. Some of the water from the Interatlantic Waterway is going into homes along the shoreline. You've got trees down. You've got gas station covers down. You've got signs down.
Housley says it looks like the rain's finally letting up there in central Florida. The Red Cross will be on the scene tomorrow to help Floridians pick up the pieces.
Some people will have sadly lost their homes, and we'll be standing by to give them shelter and work with them to figure out what's next.
Marty Evans, president of the Red Cross, says hundreds of disaster volunteers will help victims get back to the lives they once knew. They'll also serve food and water.
We'll be setting up kitchens, portable kitchens, a kitchen and a trailer that will then produce 20 to 30,000 meals a day.
People interested in helping the Red Cross help the people of Florida are encouraged to write a check. A 9,200-acre fire in Sonoma County is threatening vineyards. Firefighters are trying to surround the fire before it gets to them. It's 10% contained. Another fire in the Sierra Nevada foothills in Calaveras County has done a lot of damage.
We're showing 13 residential structures lost and 45 outbuildings destroyed. One residential structure was damaged.
Forestry Department spokesman Tom Foley says the fire is about 85% surrounded. A burning RV started the 2,700-acre fire Friday. About 3,000 people had to leave their homes. And there's word tonight that President Clinton will be off to the operating room tomorrow. A source close to the former president says that's when he'll go in for his heart bypass surgery. Clinton admits he's feeling anxious. He's been in a New York hospital since Friday. More warm temperatures tomorrow, the forecast, and more Coast to Coast with Art Bell are coming up on KFI AM 640, KFI News. It's time 12:03.
And they're off out of the gate. It's a road trip with Open Highway and Sing Along. But here comes Traffic Jam, and Pat Carr is going nowhere. Now from the back, it's Crying Baby. Are we there yet? And I got a pee-pee. Now in the front, it's Anxious Daddy with Can You Wait? But I got a pee-pee is coming on strong. And Rest Stop is nowhere in sight. It's I got a pee-pee. It's Can You Wait? It's I got a pee-pee. It's Can You Wait? Now heading for home, it's Anxious Daddy with We're Almost There, but in the end, it's too little too late.
For a better time, go to the track. Horse racing, we bet you love it.
Catch all the action at Fairplex Park this weekend. Opening day, September 10th, is Aloha Friday, courtesy of Hawaiian Airlines, Hilton Resorts in Hawaii, and the DoubleTree Alana Hotel Waikiki. Saturday, meet the Fairplex Park jockeys while you collect and trade jockey cards. And Sunday, enjoy a free menudo breakfast with mariachi music. As always, there's a stakes race every day at Fairplex during the L.A. County Fair.
Following are the basic contest rules for KFI AM 640. All entrants to any KFI contest agree to obey the rules of the contest. All prizes must be accepted as awarded. Inability of winner to accept the prize will result in forfeiture. If the prize includes travel, lodging, entertainment, or a special event, winner is responsible for all taxes, expenses, and gratuities. Winner agrees that the acceptance of any trip ticket as a prize from KFI AM 640 does so entirely upon their own initiative, risk, and responsibility. Winner will let KFI AM 640 use their name, voice, and or likeness for promotional purposes. No purchase necessary. KFI AM 640 retains the right to amend these rules and regulations at any time for any reason. Full contest rules available during regular business hours at the offices of KFI. KFI AM 640 is located at 3400 West Olive Avenue, Suite 550 in Burbank, or on the web at KFI640.com.
Doing the right thing daily.
Dr. Laura.
So you can't say, I can't cooperate in the raising. I can't do what I made a vow to help you do because it makes me uncomfortable. That's not very mature, grown up, or manly.
Dr. Laura.
Today, noon to 3.
On AFI, AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
Southland weather from KFI, mostly clear overnight, lows about 60. More warm weather tomorrow, maybe even some more record breakers. Highs are going to be in the 90s for Metro LA and Orange County, 80s at the beaches, triple digits for the valleys. We're looking at about 108 or so for the Woodland Hills area. It's 75 in Irvine, 77 in Fullerton, 76 in Sherman Oaks, 79 in downtown LA. A high surf advisory for a lot of Southland beaches tomorrow as well. KFI is a talk station with the most frequent traffic, live local news on the hour. On the half and when it breaks. 1206 Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Living on the edge of a dream. Indeed, that would be us in the nighttime. But, you know, so many times what we talk about here on the air, today's fantasy or almost science fiction absolutely becomes tomorrow's reality. And tonight, with Rupert Sheldrake, this is one of those things. Would you like to feel 10 years younger in a matter of 10 weeks? Well, there's proof now. The effects of aging can be slowed down, even reversed, with human growth hormone, HGH. For quite a while, you've heard me talk about the incredible age-reversing benefits of HGH. Well, now, according to thousands of articles, higher HGH levels can help you look and feel younger. That's why I take Ultimate HGH, a natural formula to help boost my body's own production of HGH. So if your goal is to help improve energy, stamina, lose unwanted fat, diminish wrinkles, enhance memory, immune function, and vision, then Ultimate HGH is for you, too. Why let Mother Nature get the best of you? Call today and order Ultimate HGH, and when you order two bottles of Ultimate HGH, you get the third absolutely free. About $33 a month in savings, a tremendous savings off the typical $100 a month for comparable products. Plus, with your order, you're going to receive a free book on HGH, a $20 value absolutely free. So, call my good friends at Great American Products. Order Ultimate HGH today. The number is 1-800-557-4627. That's 1-800-557-4627. 1-800-557-4627.
I'm a hypocrite. No, I'm not a vegetarian that wears leather shoes. You see, I used to smoke pot. And when I found pot in my kid's room, I confronted him about it. It would have been easier to look the other way and not feel like a hypocrite. But I'm his dad, and he's not allowed to smoke pot. Period. It might be hard, but to help your kid with their problem, first you have to get over yours.
Action. The anti-drug.
Hypocritical? Yeah, that's me.
For more information, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add him to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with the meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got GEICO. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO. Online at GEICO.com.
A character named Vassal, writing from Carbondale, Colorado, says, "Hey, Art, military soldiers are taught that when you're taking out, that's in quotes, taking out a sentry, as you sneak up on him, you must direct your attention away from the sentry, like on your feet, or turn your head to the side, or the enemy will sense you. Soldiers know about this, Rupert?"
Oh, yes, they definitely do. And this is, the British military, too, have similar guidelines. And, you know, if you're creeping up in our special armed services, the SAS, they tell them just the same. And I've interviewed a whole lot of security guards, detectives, surveillance personnel, people whose job it is to watch others, and they all know about this. And, of course, it's big in the Japanese and the Chinese martial arts. They have training procedures where you can train yourself to become more sensitive to being looked at from behind.
Mm-hmm. All of this, and certainly precognition, Professor, seem to be exclusive of time and space. They really do. In other words, they seem instant. They seem, the communication seems to occur, I don't know, right away, and sometimes there's time involved, as in with precognition. So this, you know, it clearly indicates that something is operating independently of linear time as we're measuring it here on Earth, right?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say independently, because most precognitions refer to things that are going to happen in the fairly near future,
right,
you know, a few days ahead.
Right.
It's not like We're getting flashes from, well, we may be getting flashes from centuries or millennia ahead. We just wouldn't know because we wouldn't live long enough to find out. But generally speaking, these precognitions are fairly short-term. There are a few examples of longer-term ones. The earthquake things with, you see, if it was independent of time and space, dogs would be getting excited about possible earthquakes all the time.
That's
and actually,
a good point.
They only do it just before one.
Quite a good point.
So, I think there's a kind of blur where in the immediate future where these things, you know, where things are probabilities, where these things come from. But it doesn't sort of stretch out uniformly in all directions.
Hmm.
So I think also these experiments, some of the best things in modern parapsychology, I think, are these experiments on short-term presentiment, picking up what's about to happen just a few seconds ahead. And those are definitely limited in time. Those over a fairly short time scale, but they're still... Do you know about those, Art?
Not only do I know about them, Professor, but I had one happen to me, and just only once in my whole life, but it was shocking. I mean, Professor, just it affected my whole life. I'll never forget it for as long as I live, and God, I hate telling a story again because it's boring to the people that have heard it, but I lived
in... It's not boring to me.
Okay, I lived in a little garden apartment in Santa Barbara, California, and I came home from work. I worked in radio. I came home from work one night, sat down, watched the evening news with Dan Rather or whatever. And in the middle of the news, I suddenly, you know, I parked my car on the sidewalk right out in front of the sliding glass door in the apartment, and I had the curtains closed. And I here I am watching the evening news because, you know, I've got to know the news for my job, and I have this, like, ocean waves coming over me saying, someone's going to hit your car, someone's going to hit your car. So I said, finally, I got mad at myself, and I went over and I opened the curtains, and I looked, my car was fine. I said, what a bunch of, you know what, and I went back and sat down and resumed watching the news, and immediately it came washing over me again, just like it was so strong, Professor, that I could not ignore it. And I said a few bad words, got up from the couch, went over, opened the curtains, there's my car, fine, but I see this guy walking down the sidewalk, He goes down, he gets in his car, which is right in front of mine, starts the engine, puts it in reverse, and hits my car. And I sank down on my knees. It freaked me out so much, I sank down to my knees. But I got up real quick, slid open the door, and I said, hey, I got your, I saw that, I got your license number. And he said, I'm stopping. You know, and it was fine, no big deal. But, Professor, there's no way. I knew that was going to happen. It was being forced on me. It wasn't like some little vague feeling. This was like, da-da, hitting me with a hammer.
Mm.
And
that's a really interesting case, yeah.
Well, but it's never graced me with its presence since. It's never happened since. I couldn't make it happen if I wanted to.
Well, it may be happening more than you think, you see, because, you know, in these parapsychology experiments, I don't know if you've talked about them on your show before, but they're fascinating things. They've been going on in California and elsewhere with Dean Radin, and in Europe with Dick Biermann at the University of Amsterdam.
Oh, I've been interviewing the heck out of Dean Radin. I'm so in the middle of this, you wouldn't believe it. But which experiments are you talking about?
I'm talking about the ones where you sit in front of a computer. You're wired up to measure your skin resistance, you know, which measures emotional arousal.
Oh, yes.
Galvanic skin response, like in a lie detector.
Yes.
And then, when you're relaxed, you press a button, and 10 seconds later, a picture appears on the screen of the computer. And the computer selects the picture at random, so no one knows what's going to appear. Most of these pictures are just fairly bland, normal scenes. But some of them are scenes of emotionally shocking violence, or they're hardcore pornography. Now, of course, when people see violent or pornographic pictures, their skin resistance changes, the adrenaline pulses, they get an emotional response.
Mm-hmm.
That's not surprising, it's well known. But the key thing, what's so fascinating about these experiments, is that that emotional response, the change in skin resistance, begins about 5 seconds before the picture appears on the screen.
Huh.
And the pictures are only selected a millisecond before by the computer, so you're responding to something that's going to happen. And it's not conscious either. What's so interesting is that I've done these experiments as a subject. I did them in Amsterdam with Dick Biermann. And I scored, you know, a highly significant effect. I was responding in advance, but I didn't know it. The machine measured it from my skin resistance. I had no conscious awareness that my body was preparing me for an emotionally shocking moment. And I think this kind of short-term preparation of the body, the preparation of the emotional response, could play an important part in a lot of people have this thing, they're driving along, they suddenly feel that they've got to take care, and then a car ahead spins out of control a few seconds later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it also works in fast sports like tennis and ping pong and cricket and things where you have people are responding too quickly for the normal senses to explain it. And I think we may be this kind of information coming in about what's about to happen in the short-term future over a few seconds ahead on a regular basis in our normal life. And I think what's revealed by these experiments is that this is really common. This happens to all of us without our knowing it. So I think that's a fascinating discovery that they've made, and I think it's some of the most interesting stuff to come out of laboratory parapsychology for years.
But again, that implies a little trip through time, because you're anticipating an event that has not yet occurred. That's a little trip through time.
It is a little trip through time, but the question is, what kind of trip? And the most interesting thing about this kind of research, parapsychological research on precognition, which I review in my book, The Sense of Being Stared At, is that what you're getting a precognition of is not so much what's actually going to happen as what's going to happen in your own mind. If you don't know, if you never see what's going to happen, you don't respond to it. You're responding to the future of your state of your own mind. So it's not so much that you're getting a readout of the external world. You're getting a readout across time of your reaction to something.
Well, no matter what, it's across time.
Oh, it's across time. But it's across time, as it were, within the mind. And our minds already work across time through the phenomenon of memory. So our minds are embedded in time in a different way from...
Yes, but memory is a thing of the past, and granted, that's a different kind of a trip through time, but for an event that has not yet occurred...
I agree. It's really hard to conceive of how this can happen. But I think that the discovery that it's to do with a connection with our own mind in the future narrows down the field of inquiry a bit. It's not like we're getting a kind of readout from the external world. We're getting a readout from our own minds in the future. So the connection is with our own mind in the future, just as we have a connection with our own mind in the past through memory. Of course, it's different from memory, and it poses far more theoretical problems.
Now, how much difference do you notice in the testing you do, Professor, between individuals? In other words, do you stumble into the occasional absolute PSI genius? I mean, somebody who will score far, far beyond others in precognitive skills and so forth.
Yes. Yes, there's certainly quite a big difference. I've been doing a lot of work recently on telephone telepathy and email telepathy. That's the phenomenon whereby somebody, you think of someone and then they call.
Yes.
You must know that phenomenon.
I, of course, do, yes.
Yeah. Well, I've got a very simple experiment to test for that. Again, I describe it in my book, and I've got ongoing online telepathy experiments, which anyone can take part in on my website.
Or you think of somebody and they email you. Same thing, I
guess.
That's
the same thing. I've just written a paper on that based on hundreds of tests. How the tests work, in brief, is that we have four potential telephoners or emailers. So if you were the subject, you'd name four people it might happen with. You'd sit at home with a landline telephone, no caller ID system.
Mm.
You'd be videotaped continuously. I'd pick one of the four callers at random by throwing a die or from a random number generator, tell them to call you. The phone would ring. You'd know the phone was ringing from one of these four people. And before you pick it up, you have to guess which one it is. So you're right or you're wrong. And if you were just guessing pure chance, you'd have a 1 in 4 or 25% success rate.
However...
And in fact, people are way above that. It's closer to 50%. Now, in these tests, which are a very simple, straightforward measure of telepathic ability, some people are definitely stars. You know, they do really well. Other people are at chance levels. And even the people who do really well, they often do really well, better with some callers than others. We know telepathy works best with people you know well. And I've proved that in these experiments. With strangers, people whose names they know but they've never met, the results are at chance levels. With people they know well, the results are way, way above chance.
Mm.
With some callers, with whom they have a specially strong bond, they're right almost 100% of the time.
Mm.
So we can actually measure these individual differences quite easily in these telepathy tests. Which I think are some of the most successful telepathy tests around.
Now, Professor, are you convinced that these things that you're revealing and proving with the testing you're doing, are you convinced that human beings have always had these abilities, perhaps at one time utilized them to a far greater extent than we do today, and that we're just sort of rediscovering, reinventing the wheel here?
Yes, that's what I think. And the reason I think that is, first of all, these telepathic abilities are very common among many species of animals. So it's not just humans. Secondly, they're often better developed in children than they are in adults. So they're not things that are acquired through long education. In fact, education probably does a lot to get rid of these things because our educational system is rather hostile to them.
Indeed.
And thirdly, they're much more common in third world countries where people are less educated in the modern way. I lived in India for years, and these kinds of things are common there. They're taken for granted. So they are in Africa, and so they are among traditional peoples all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're not necessarily things that humans have lost. There are a lot of humans who I think still have them very strongly. I think they're things that modern educated Westerners have lost to varying degrees, but even though there's every discouragement and there's skeptics telling you these things are impossible and there's whole militant skeptical organizations campaigning against belief in them and so on, the fact is that about 80% of people in America and in Britain have had telepathic experiences with telephones. So the phenomena haven't gone away, despite every discouragement.
All right, here's another angle that I'd like to ask you about. This is from last night, too, our discussion with Mr. Schwartz, and that is, Professor, is there any indication that in general society, perhaps in Britain and America, where such things could perhaps be measured, that the most successful people, which might equate to the richest people or the most famous or the, I don't know, the CEOs of large companies that have been enormously successful, that these people would test with a higher quotient for the sorts of things we've been talking about tonight than the average person?
Oh, I think so, yes. I mean, no one's done a systematic study as far as I know, but I know from my own experience that when I'm talking about these things to groups of business people,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of people in the business world who this makes a lot of sense to.
Yes.
In the business world where you have to make decisions with incomplete information, you know, you have to hire people, fire them, you have to guess with the way the markets are going to go, you have to have a feeling of whether something's going to work out or not.
Right.
People who are intuitive do much better than people who are not. I think in the academic world, it's a different thing. You know, academics, you know, play safe. They can spend years waiting for evidence and stuff, and they quibble over details and so on. It's much less pronounced there. But in the business world, especially among people who are entrepreneurial, who have a flair, an intuitive flair for knowing what's going to happen, for feeling things, I think that these are some of the people who are using their intuition most effectively, and their success depends on it. I mean, these things, we don't have these abilities just for amusement or entertainment. We have them because they're useful, and I think animals have them because they're useful and important for survival.
Well, life is nothing but a long series of decisions. Do this or do that. Do this or do that. Go in this direction or that direction, and the more intuitive go in these directions just based on how they feel. And so you would think the very successful ones would be extremely intuitive. Now, another question, for those who don't have the natural ability, is there a way to, if you've got one who's thick as a brick intuitively, is it possible to nurture that inherent talent and develop it in later years?
Well, yes, it is. And I know from even just from my own experiments that if we give people feedback on whether they're right or wrong, and they just do, for example, the staring tests, you do the same test over and over again, people get better because they're getting feedback. It's like biofeedback. With feedback, you can improve. And in the martial arts, they train people to develop these skills. And I'm working on ways of trying to improve these skills in a workshop-type format. Because I think that you can train them. These are abilities. Some people are better naturally than others, of course.
But it can be inculcated. All right, Professor, hold on. We're at the bottom of yet another hour. Professor Rupert Sheldrake is my guest. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM in the nighttime.
KFI.
AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
KFI News.
News on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks.
I'm Lisa Osborne in the KFI News Center. The Corps of Francis is now over the Gulf of Mexico. At last report, the tropical storm was 25 miles north-northwest of Tampa as it headed for the state's panhandle. Residents of four counties have been ordered to leave the area. It's possible the storm could become a hurricane again before returning ashore. The hurricane has killed two people. Millions remain without power. Early estimates of damage put insured losses at between $2 and $10 billion. U.S. and Iraqi officials have reportedly caught the king of clubs in the deck of cards of most wanted. Izzat Ibrahim Al-Douri was Saddam Hussein's second in command. Officials say they busted him during a sting operation at a medical clinic. Other reports say 150 armed men with Al-Douri got into a firefight with troops. Reporter Kim Housego says if the reports are true, Al-Douri is a big catch.
U.S. intelligence believes he's both playing an organizing and financing role in the insurgency that has plagued American forces since the end of the war.
Neither U.S. nor Iraqi officials have confirmed the bust. Sunday's record-breaking heat could mean more hot stuff is in store for us this Labor Day in some Southland cities. Temperatures from 92 to 102 degrees are expected today, and that's just in the L.A. Orange County metro area. The National Weather Service says the mercury could soar to 108 in the valleys. Hurricane Howard is sending high surf to Southland beaches. I'm Lisa Osborne. It's 12:31 in the KFI News Center.
Traffic presented by Lexus Dealers.
South LA, 110 South Carpool Lane before Gage Avenue. There's a truck bed lighter on the elevated roadway. South El Monte, 60 East at San Gabriel Boulevard. Look out for the doggy running in the left lane of the roadway. And Silmar, 5 North before the 405, is still cleaning up a car and pickup truck, both of which crashed into the center divider. This traffic report's brought to you by FlexShare Power. Listen for the FlexShare Power Now alert. It will tell you when electricity supplies are running low and give you steps you can take to conserve energy and keep the power on. FlexShare Power Now for all Californians. I'm Mark Helmer in the KFI Traffic Center.
KFI is all over the big story.
Way more than headlines.
Our party's great contribution is to expand freedom in our own land and all over the world.
He'll always tell you what he really thinks. You can count on him.
I send him back to Washington for 4 more years. 4 more years.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Jen, I just found the best way to meet single guys. It's called One Special Love.
Ugh, internet dating is too impersonal.
This is totally different. You can use the computer by logging on to onespeciallove.com or call on the phone.
The phone?
Last night, I called 866-614-7777 and talked to a great guy. He was so nice, and he had a picture posted. I logged on, checked him out, and he was hot.
How much is the monthly membership fee?
There is no membership fee. I created my profile for free and started receiving messages right away. You have to try it. Onespeciallove.com. 866-614-7777.
Are you ready to do dating the right way? My name is Jeffrey Burns, and I created the only system out there connecting people by the telephone or the internet into one giant dating network. The problem with other dating sites is that thousands of impersonal text messages are sent out and deleted because, let's face it, text has no personality. On One Special Love, we have found that a lot can be learned from the sound of someone's voice, making it easier to connect. With One Special Love, you can use your computer, your cell phone, you can call from work or call from home, and you can pick up your messages or mingle with thousands of members who are on the network. Call 866-614-7777 or log on to onespeciallove.com. In the last 7 years, I have personally received over 400 wedding notices and thousands of thank yous. I am totally convinced that this is the best way to meet other singles. Call 866-614-7777. 614-7777 or log on to onespeciallove.com.
Are you losing your hair?
New data released by the FDA indicates that the body chemical dihydrotestosterone, commonly known as DHT, is the leading cause of hair loss. At our institute, we studied numerous hair loss treatments and found that Folinex is the most effective solution for stimulating new hair growth in balding areas. Folinex is powerful enough to regrow hair on virtually anyone. We guarantee it.
Order risk-free now by calling 800-731-9907. 800-731-9907. Call 800-731-9907 now.
Get more of what you come here for.
John Ziegler, tonight 10 to 1, KFI AM 640.
With your money and your name, and hide myself in sorrow while you play your cheating game. Silver threads and golden needles can unbend this heart of mine.
And I did not drown that sorrow.
You think I should be happy?
Mark Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from East of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From West of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. In a moment, I think we'll ask the professor about remote viewing. Last night's subject, and actually the subject of many nights on this program, and remote viewing is incredible stuff. We'll ask the professor what he thinks about it in a moment.
KFI.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Well, listen closely, because you're definitely not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why, if you do make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Tplisky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Take it from me. Reclaim control now and join the legions of listeners who've had the incredible results, because it really does work. When you order two bottles of Dr. Tplisky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula to reduce inflammation and further support the health of your prostate. Plus, his groundbreaking book, The Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed to work, or you get your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep the book and the newsletter free as your gift. Not available in any store. So call now, 1-800-603-7277. That's 1-800-603-7277. 1-800-603-7277.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
Wow, this is big. Save big on all your tobacco products by ordering directly from Big Indian Smoke Shop. You save big with Big Indian because your order comes directly from the Seneca Nation, tax-free. Really low prices and no tax means you save, well, big.
But wait, we can't tell you how low these prices are. The man won't let us. But you can check out the lowest tobacco prices in North America.
Get your tobacco products at the lowest possible price. Call Big Indian at 1-800-898-9040, 1-800-898-9040, or go to BigIndian.com and save. Big.
KFI AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
I think all of this is tied in together. I think most reasonable people would conclude it is too. All of these abilities that we've been discussing in remote viewing, as presented last night, most recently by Stephen Schwartz, is right squarely in that category. Remote viewing, the remote viewers claim an amazing, just amazing, consistent, repeatable ability. And so I wonder, obviously you've looked at the remote viewing phenomena, Professor. Do you think it lives up to its claims?
Well, I do. Actually, I did took part in an experiment with Stefan Schwartz in Spain recently. We were at a conference together, and it worked very well. I mean, I got the target myself in a way that really impressed me. My only doubt about remote viewing is exactly what's going on. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's, you know, the data from the experiments are very impressive. Something's happening.
Yes.
I think in some cases it's very close to telepathy, because in most remote viewing experiments, but not all, you have a beacon person who goes to a place, and then people pick up
what they're seeing or experiencing.
That's right.
That's what happened in the one I took part in. And the then the question is, well, is it remote viewing? Are you directly seeing the other place, or are you simply picking up telepathically what the other person is seeing?
Mm-hmm.
In which case, it's a kind of telepathy, not unlike those telepathy experiments where people look at videos in one room and someone else
yes.
sort of works out what they're seeing in another.
Yes, and so you believe it to be telepathy.
Well, there are some cases in the psychic spying program where it wasn't. They had people looking at targets based on map references with nobody there. So in that case, it was genuine clairvoyance or remote viewing. But I think most of the experiments that Stefan does and that other people do on remote viewing are ones where telepathy and remote viewing are mixed up together. And I think it's my own feeling is it's largely telepathic. That doesn't make it any less mysterious, of course, but it's not a clear case where this is totally separate from telepathy. The
yeah.
two are going on together.
Yes, but the remote viewers claim an unusually high success rate. Now, of course, they attribute that to the very stiff protocols that they have for doing what they do. But you, so you do buy into the fact that they are generally as successful as they claim for the most part.
Oh, I think so. Yes, I think the experiments are successful. But one of the things about the remote viewing programs that were funded by the U.S. government until relatively recently was that they did quite a strong pre-selection of candidates. The people who were involved in those programs, they tested lots of people, and they selected only the top 2 or 3% for their
obviously
remote viewing programs. So they weren't just taking anyone off the street. They were checking out who was had a natural ability in this.
Well, I don't mean to be skeptic-like. However, if it really worked so well, I know my government pretty well, and I assume that you know your government pretty well. And if it really worked, wouldn't it be absolutely irresistible for the government, particularly with the dangerous times we live in today, to be using these gifted people in a world full of terrorism?
Well, I think that governments have ambiguous attitudes. I mean, some people in governments are standard skeptics who think it's impossible and a waste of money. There are others who think it works,
yes.
but who tend to keep it quiet.
Well, their business is wasting money, so...
Well, yes, but they you know, there are some people who are just terribly opposed to anything like this. You know, the sort of knee-jerk skeptic types, and they exist in government too. I think what happens is that I know here in Britain that the police forces often use psychics of various kinds, but they don't do it in public. They do it behind the scenes because they know it would create controversy if it was in public view. We just don't know how much is going on behind the scenes in governments and in police forces.
Well, Stefan, as you put it, who was on last night, said to be sure and ask you this night about the parrot experiments. What did he mean?
Well, he's referring to some experiments I've been doing with a psychic parrot. A lot of parrots are psychic, as it turns out, especially African greys. And there's one I've been working with in particular that lives in New York. Belongs to someone called Amy Morgana, and the parrot's called Nkisi, N-K-I-S-I.
Mm-hmm.
And this parrot is currently the animal with the largest vocabulary in the world of any animal. It has a vocabulary of over 1,000 words now. And the parrot uses... I mean, the phenomenal thing about this parrot is it has this incredible linguistic ability. It speaks in sentences... Amy has sort of conversations with it. It understands what she's saying. It knows what words mean.
Now, wait a moment. I thought that parrots only parroted, that parrots only repeated sounds that they had learned randomly or might associate with a cracker, maybe, or something like that, but they didn't actually think. You're telling me they speak sentences?
Oh, yes. They can... This is not just the work I've been doing with Amy. This has actually been established by Dr. Irene Pepperberg, who worked at MIT for years, with a parrot called Alex. And Pepperberg had a lot of opposition within the academic world because what she proved, effectively, which is why we don't need to prove it all over again, is that Alex was using language meaningfully and used it in an abstract way. For example, the word yellow. She could show him a tray of objects, one of which was yellow, that he, objects he'd never seen before, and said, give me the yellow one. He'd bend over and pick it up with his beak and give it to her, showing that he could use the word yellow or other color, words for other colors, in an abstract way, applying to objects of, that he'd never seen before.
What might that parrot have said that implied, you know, a thinking process?
Well, what I think about Nkisi, what implies a thinking process, is that he comments appropriately on things that are actually happening. And it either happens, you know, if somebody's comes in the room with a necklace on, for example, he says, that's a pretty necklace. I mean, in an appropriate way, not just to anyone, but only if they're wearing a necklace. That's the kind of thing. I mean, it's sort of remarks that are relevant and appropriate.
That would be very unnerving.
It is unnerving, but what's even more unnerving is that M.A. noticed that not only does he use language, has this incredible linguistic ability, but he started picking up her thoughts and saying what she was thinking.
Oh.
So she had many examples, hundreds, literally hundreds, that she's recorded in a log of how he knows what she's thinking. And when she first told me about this, which was in the year 2000, I went over to meet her in New York when she emailed me about all this. I was just astonished that this really seemed to happen. And we set up a series of controlled experiments to test whether the parrot really was telepathic with her, as it seemed to be on a daily basis.
Yes, and how did you test that in an experiment?
How we did it, we got a series of pictures corresponding to words the parrot knew. First, Amy made a list of words the parrot knew that you could get pictures for, things like water, telephone, flowers, things, common words like that.
Mm-hmm.
We then got a third party, somebody otherwise uninvolved with the experiment, to put photos corresponding to those images in a series of thick brown paper envelopes and seal them. And then shuffle them and number them in a random order. So no one knew what was in any envelope.
Right.
Then in the tests, Aimee was in a room on a different floor of the house from the parrot. She was filmed continuously. All the doors were shut. There was no sound transmission.
Yes.
In any case, she didn't say anything. And the parrot was in a different room with nobody else there, filmed continuously on video. So the whole of this, from both her and the parrots, completely recorded on video.
Got it.
And Amy then opened an envelope and looked at the picture in it for 2 minutes. So say it was a picture of a couple on a beach. This was corresponding to a word that the parrot knew, naked body. So the question was, would the parrot then say naked body, or would it say other words that were totally irrelevant?
Mm-hmm.
And if it said the word that corresponded to the target, then it was a hit. And if it said other ones, it was a miss.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were 20 different words. And we did 72 trials with in which the parrot said one of these key words. The success rate was about 35%. I mean,
yikes.
It was way, way above chance.
Oh, yes.
Hugely significant. We had all the videotapes independently transcribed. We had a professor of statistics independently do the statistics. It's hugely significant. This was published recently in the Journal of Scientific Exploration. So it's also described in my book, The Sense of Being Stared At. So these experiments worked in the sense they gave dramatically good evidence for telepathy. This parrot was much better than most human subjects in telepathy tests. And, you know, the whole thing's on film. So we've got the entire experiment objectively recorded. So I think that the evidence for this parrot being telepathic is overwhelmingly strong. And it's probably the most remarkable case of animal telepathy I've ever come across.
And then, of course, there would be dolphins, for example. I'm sure experiments could be done there. I've got this email that I'd like to read. Dear Art, please... ask Dr. Sheldrake about his other works. He has fascinating stuff on reaching critical mass in the mass consciousness of any species. For example, they showed monkeys how to wash their fruit at a beach on one island, and soon they were all doing it. But then it spread to other islands through, apparently, mass consciousness once critical mass had been reached. That's pretty incredible. Is that true, Professor?
Well, this is the 100th monkey story, it's often called. It's a story that illustrates the principle I'm talking about, which I call morphic resonance, a kind of collective memory, mass consciousness.
Yes.
But although it's a good story, it's not particularly accurate. It's one of those things that's improved in the telling. What really happened was something a bit like that, but the story was embellished by Lyle Watson in his book Lifetide, and he made it clear he was actually improving the story. He said, let us imagine that on a particular day, an extra monkey, let us say the 100th one, starts washing these sweet potatoes. Then suddenly they're all doing it everywhere. Well, there was evidence that monkeys picked it up on other islands, but it wasn't. Nobody ever documented this critical mass phenomenon. That was something Lyle Watson made up. And in the retellings of the story, the details have got more and more embellished.
But there was a nugget of truth to it.
There's a nugget of truth in it, but the thing is that the usual versions of the story are so far away from what happened that it's easy prey for skeptics to debunk. They say, this never happened, it's not true, it's just a myth.
Yes.
But I prefer the Thousandth Rat story. In my book, The Presence of the Past, I discuss experiments done with rats learning tricks in laboratories, which showed that, quite unexpectedly, rats all over the world started learning these tricks quicker after rats had been trained in one laboratory, in fact at Harvard, to do this trick. It got easier all over the world, and this improvement was documented over many years. And so there is good evidence for this kind of phenomenon, but the 100th monkey story isn't the best evidence because it's just not very well documented, and these improved versions of the story have drifted further and further away from what actually happened.
Professor, what about the transplant stories? There are so many amazing transplant stories where apparently memory is transferred to the recipient of, you know, some organ. I mean, they begin to have memories of the person who donated the organ. That would imply some sort of cellular memory or something, or an, I don't know what it implies.
Well, I agree, they're very interesting cases, and I gave a workshop a few months ago in Boulder, Colorado, where one of the people in the workshop was a woman with a hand transplant who did have these memories. So I actually met and had the chance to discuss this with somebody who had first-hand experience. Well, I think, you see, my theory of memory, morphic resonance, is a theory that through similarity, things tune in to what's happened in the past, that each species has a collective memory. And when a transplant happens, I wouldn't say that the memory is embedded in the cells or in the heart itself, but that the heart of the person resonates with the person it's come from and acts as something that tunes into the memories. You see, I don't think memories are embedded in material systems. I think they're accessed by tuning, a kind of tuning process. That's what morphic resonance is. So I don't think we have to suppose that memories are sort of etched into the cells or in DNA or RNA or proteins inside the heart. I think the heart simply resonates by being part of the body of the person who's now dead. That heart resonates in the past with the complete body it came from, picking up memories from that person in the past, which then come into the mind of the person who's had the transplant. So I think there is a memory transfer, but I don't think it's actually materially embodied in the heart. That's my own interpretation.
Well, these are absolutely... they're all somehow connected, whether it be remote viewing or the things we're talking about. I have this sense that there's some commonality to it all, and it must it must be some sort of mass consciousness or something that we truly don't understand. I mean, a reach out across a dimension, perhaps, where time and space don't exist. I have no idea, but certainly we're on to something. When are we going to all find out what we're on to?
Well, you know, I think that it's not quite as obscure as you might suggest. I mean, I spent years thinking about this, and I think that one can see the outlines of explanations, and we need, first of all, it has to be a kind of field theory. Secondly, it has to be one where you can have influences traveling through or across time. But there's a lot of problems in regular biology which I think require these field theories. I mean, we've been talking about things that most people would consider, you know, beyond the fringe of the normal sort of accepted common sense view, the sixth sense, paranormal, psychic, etc. But I think that these field phenomena are involved in perfectly normal things too. And I started off my interest in these not through thinking about psychic phenomena, but by thinking about the way plants grow. I started as a developmental biologist, which is what I did at Cambridge for many years. I came to the conclusion that just to understand the growth of a regular plant in the garden, we need to have a field theory and also a kind of collective memory theory to understand things that are right at the core of normal, mainstream, regular biology. So when you see it that way, these other phenomena are a kind of spin-off from theories, field theories we need just in ordinary biology anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm quite pleased that you mentioned plants, because there's a story to be, of course, told there. That, you know, the thing about the lettuce or the plants or whatever it was, or Professor, hold on. We'll do that and go to the phones after the break. Dr. Rupert Sheldrake from London, England, is my guest in the middle of the night. My usual place. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
It's Sit and Sleep's Labor Day sale, where we're taking everything off our queens.
That's indecent.
During Sit and Sleep's Labor Day sale, you get the lowest prices of the year with queen size sets from Simmons, Sealy, Serta, Springer, and Miralux. Selling elsewhere at up to $6.99, now on sale for just $3.89. That's one cheap queen.
Laddie, you should be ashamed.
Buy now and with your good credit, pay no deposit, no interest, and no payments for one whole year. Plus, with Sit and Sleep's free same-day delivery, you can buy it today and in many cases sleep on it tonight, so you can get rid of that old bag as soon as possible.
How dare you?
So don't miss the lowest prices of the year during Sit and Sleep's Labor Day sale, where we're stripping our prices on twins, fulls, kings, and especially queens down to their absolute skimpiest.
You animal, you.
Call 1-800-FREE to shop by phone. Sit and Sleep will beat anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free.
Or tuts or chemical peel.
The breasts on the hens are totally real.
L.A. County had a fair. E-I-E-I-O.
It's the realest thing to hit L.A. since the body parts you were born with. The L.A. County Fair. With more rides, animals, free nighttime concerts and stuff for you and the kids than any county fair in North America.
L.A. County had a fair. E-I-E-I-O.
Weren't no tofu anywhere.
E-I-E-I-O.
No counting carbs or trying to be thin.
We call our diet the Beckin.
L.A. County had a fair. E-I-E-I-O.
So laugh it up now and Botox out the laugh lines later. September 10th through the 26th at Fairplex. The L.A. County Fair. Kinder. Simpler. Funner.
Save big on fair admission and carnival rides at participating AT&T wireless stores.
KFI, Southern California's newsroom.
Kobe Bryant's journey reportedly says that apology red in court is what got Kobe off.
Jackson's molestation trial is set to begin in January.
He talked about how he followed Scott Peterson back and forth between his home in Modesto to the Berkeley Marina.
Southern California's KFI.
Los Angeles.
News on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks.
They come in threes, and that includes hurricanes. I'm Sam Botta. This is the 1 o'clock news on KFI. Another hurricane may be on its way toward Florida. Ivan is picking up steam in the Atlantic, about 2,400 miles southeast of the state.
It's located almost 1,000 miles east of the Windward Islands, so it's still a good ways out in the Atlantic, and it's moving off to the west at about 21 miles per hour right now. The winds are about 115 miles per hour.
National Weather Service meteorologist Park Camp says it'll hit the Bahamas by Friday, but he says it's too early to tell if Ivan will reach Florida. KFI is the talk station with the most frequent traffic reports. Presented by Lexus dealers, here's Mark Helmer in the KFI Traffic Center.
Silmar 5 North before the 210, report of a stalled car blocking the two left lanes. Downtown LA 10 East Connector Road to the 110, the stalled car blocking the transition road. And South LA 105 East Connector Road to the 110 South, similar story, an overheated vehicle is blocking that transition road. This traffic report is brought to you by Pechanga Casino. When it comes to casinos, make the best choice. Make it Pechanga. Luxury rooms, great dining, top name entertainment. That's Pechanga, California's best four diamond resort and casino off I-15. In Temecula. I'm Mark Helmer in the KFI Traffic Center.
KFI News Time 101. And speaking of people in their cars,
we've had two people killed, unfortunately, in traffic collisions as compared to four last year, so that's good news.
But Highway Patrol spokesman Carl Quintero says more people across the state have been killed compared to this time last year.
We've had 22 people killed statewide versus 14 of last year.
He says almost 1,000 people statewide have been busted for drunk driving. 194 of those arrests came in L.A. County. A 9,200-acre fire in Sonoma County is threatening some wine vineyards. Firefighters are trying to surround the fire before it gets to them. It's 10% contained. Another fire in the Sierra Nevada foothills in Calaveras County has done a lot of damage.
We're showing 13 residential structures lost and 45 outbuildings destroyed. One residential structure was damaged.
Forestry Department spokesman Tom Foley says the fire is about 85% surrounded. A burning RV started the 2,700-acre fire Friday. About 3,000 people had to leave their homes. And a 2.3-mile stretch of beach from Huntington Beach to Newport Beach has been closed to swimmers and surfers. KFI's Deborah Mark explains.
It's all because of a nasty sewage spill. 13,000 gallons of treated and untreated wastewater leaked yesterday from an Orange County sanitation plant. Authorities say a power break caused it to flow into the Santa Ana River, then the Pacific Ocean. After the spill, lifeguards at Huntington Beach got 5,000 people out of the water to prevent exposure to fecal bacteria, which can cause gastrointestinal illness. Beaches will remain closed until Tuesday. Deborah Mark, KFI News.
We'll check the holiday weekend forecast for the rest of it. And more Art Bell next. KFI News Time 102.
Go to KFI640.com and listen to interviews from John and Ken's summer reality show, Political Human Sacrifice. Join KFI next Saturday, September 11th at Subway in Redondo Beach, 1888 South Pacific Coast Highway from noon to 2 and win cool KFI stuff. At Subway, the choices are always fun.
Facts, fun, audio archives, and more.
Updated daily. KFI640.com.
I'm Skip.
And I'm Steve.
The Robbins Brothers.
And we're talking to Richard and Dorothy.
Was there some kind of chemistry there immediately?
After the third day, we were kind of new.
I think after 3 days.
Three days, too? Both of you, it was a magic three days. Ever since then, it's been very wonderful.
And how did you feel when you went in the store?
I had a really positive experience. When I talked to David Lee in the Glendale's Robbins Brothers store, he was just wonderful. He focused exactly on what I wanted, gave me a very high-quality diamond. He gave me a wonderful price. So, I mean, it was such a great deal. I said that, you know, this is a great diamond. It's a great price. How can I say no to that? And I also like your warranty.
A lifetime warranty without being charged for it.
Right. I don't think I've ever seen that before anywhere. So that in itself is a very high value to me. The high level of service and the good quality and the value that you get is very tremendous.
You'll find Robbins Brothers in Canoga Park, Glendale, Torrance, Montclair, Fullerton, Mission Viejo, and San Diego.
Robbins Brothers, world's biggest engagement ring store.
John and Ken, today 3 to 7, KFI AM 640.
LegalZoom.com, what a way to do the law inexpensively and yet very professionally. You can incorporate a business for $99. a divorce for $249. A friend of mine just saved $2,400 on an LLC using LegalZoom.com. And here's the secret. Instead of you hiring an individual lawyer, these are forms and processes developed by attorneys from the most prestigious firms. The founder, Robert Shapiro, yeah, the guy who defended O.J. Simpson, he's on your side, puts his experience to work for you, and what you do is simply answer simple questions online, and they do the rest. And then they file the paperwork for you. Representatives are available by phone or email to answer the questions. They review the answer for completeness, for spelling, for grammar, and your legal work is filed. They have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you're not happy, they'll either correct the problem or refund the money. They also partner with HandleOnTheLaw.com, LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
1,000 voices. One twisted dude.
Instead of waiting for someone to start talking at the top of their lungs about sex with older boys, we will go over and make sure they're not going to do that.
It wouldn't kill you to laugh. Phil Henry, tonight, 7 to 10 on KFI.
AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
Southern California weather from KFI. Low clouds and fog this morning, but mostly sunny this afternoon. Highs in the 70s at the beaches, mid-80s for metro Los Angeles and Orange County. 90s to near 100 in the valleys. It's 76 in Irvine, Newport Beach 75, Long Beach 74, and in Hollywood 77. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 106. I'm Sam Botta, KFI News.
Don't you need her badly? Don't you love her ways? Tell me what you say.
With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know how sometimes people will say not nice things about other people, like they've got, you know, he's got the IQ of a houseplant. Well, you know what? Maybe we're not giving houseplants enough credit. Tell you what I mean in a moment. Hey, investors, would you like to know how to make 100, 200, even 300% profit in your savings and retirement accounts? Do you know which investment experts say could make that happen? Gold! James Turk, well-known economist and gold expert, recently told Barron's magazine that a weak dollar and rising budget deficits could push gold over $1,500. That's 300% higher than where it trades today. And history agrees. Last time interest rates began to rise from these levels, gold rose more than 2,000%. Are you ready to take advantage? If you want to know more, call the experts I trust with my gold investing, Lear Financial, at 1-800-400-8080. 877-474-4259. Ask for your free gold profit guide and learn how even a small investment into gold today could turn into a huge savings and retirement nest egg. Call 1-800-474-4259 now, and you'll also receive the special audio, The Gold Boom Ahead, a $29 value. The gold guide and the audio tape are free, no obligation. Call 1-800-474-4259. That's 800-474-4259. 800-474-4259.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
I'm a hypocrite. No, I'm not a vegetarian that wears leather shoes. You see, I used to smoke pot, and when I found pot in my kid's room, I confronted him about it. It would have been easier to look the other way and not feel like a hypocrite. But I'm his dad, and he's not allowed to smoke pot, period. It might be hard, but to help your kid with their problem, first you have to get over yours.
Action, the anti-drug.
Hypocritical? Yeah, that's me.
For more information, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
KFI AM 640.
More stimulating talk radio.
Now, I'm sure many, many of you have heard of the experiments or seen them because they were actually filmed of scientists in white coats who would come into a room. One scientist would come in and he'd take a big old butcher knife and, boy, he'd slaughter a plant or lettuce or whatever it was, I forget. And then another scientist would come in and they were monitoring these plants, I think, somehow or another. Anyway, the plants recognized the plant assassin every single time or something like that. That's the way the story goes. Can you fill us in, Professor, on that experimentation? I mean, I can understand the human mind and its mysterious powers, and maybe even a dog or a cat, but, geez, plants, they seem to have something going that's very similar, don't they?
Well, these experiments suggest that. The problem with these experiments is they were done in the 70s by Cleve Baxter, who's worked for the CIA. He's a polygraph expert. And they attracted a huge amount of attention, these experiments, but they haven't really been widely replicated. And I tried replicating them myself once, and the problem is that what they do is they depend on measuring electrical currents in plants. Plants do have electrical currents, a bit like nerve impulses.
Yeah.
The thing is, they have an awful lot going on all the time, and so it's rather hard to separate out what might be a signal from the background noise. It's not like an animal where you can see its behavior, like a dog going to wait at the window when its owner's on the way home. Here, what you're doing is interpreting electrical signals that you're measuring with instruments in plants.
Mm-hmm.
And there's ones going on all the time. I just, you know, I'm intrigued by this research. If I had more time, I'd sort of try doing more on it myself to try and find out just what's going on.
Well, do you think that the experiments have been overblown, that the word of them as it's been passed down is more dramatic than what actually occurred?
I do, actually, yes. And I don't think that some of the experiments make very good sense. I mean, there's one of them where the plants are supposed to react to brine shrimps being dunked in water, hot boiling water in another room.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see the slightest reason why an office rubber plant or philodendron should respond to a brine shrimp that it's never met. You know, why aren't they reacting to cows in abattoirs and slaughterhouses all over the world? There's animals being killed everywhere. You know, there's germs being killed by disinfectants and stuff. I just can't see. It doesn't make biological sense to me. So I'm a bit skeptical about some of these experiments, and I'd like to see them repeated. I'm open-minded because, and I'd love them to be true, really. It's just that I find myself a bit dubious, because they're a bit like the 100th Monkey story. They're stories that improve in the telling. And when I've looked at the original scientific reports, I haven't found them terribly convincing.
Hmm. All right. But your own research, you stand by.
Heavens, yes. I mean, my own experiments are ones that I've done lots of times. They're properly statistically evaluated. They've been through the fire of skeptical scrutiny and criticism and so forth. I mean, they're published in scientific journals. I think these are, you know, I think the things I'm talking about, with the sense of being stared at, telepathy, etc., I think are pretty well-based scientific facts.
Okay, but after all is said and done, you don't think you're going down, or you do agree that ultimately you're going down a quantum road?
I think what these things are related to is, ultimately, quantum theory is the weirdest thing on the market.
Yep.
In terms of established science. And what I'm talking about is as weird, if not weirder, than a lot of things in quantum theory.
Indeed.
From the point of view of conventional science.
All right.
It's not clear how it's related, though. That's, you know, I think that's a discussion that would take place over many years as to exactly how you could build bridges between the fields I'm talking about and quantum theory.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to get phone calls, but also Eric in Columbia, Maryland writes, Fast Blast actually, Rupert has written a great deal about birds and magnetic fields and sunspot activity on migration patterns. He does not think magnetic fields explain bird migration, and you may wish to ask him about this in light of recent stories of birds getting lost. And there have been some intriguing, kind of scary stories about migratory birds seemingly losing track, Professor, of where they're going. I don't know if you've been in touch with those stories, but...
Yeah, I've followed some of them, and also ones of pigeons on pigeon races getting lost.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Mm.
And I wonder how you considered them when you heard them.
Well, you see, I think that the evidence is that migratory birds can use a compass sense. They can use a magnetic sense.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a number of animals do have a magnetic sense that enables them to tell where north is. They're measuring the Earth's magnetic field. I don't think that that's the main sense they're using when they're navigating, though. First of all, it won't explain it even in principle. If you were taken to a remote place and parachuted in and given a compass, the compass would tell you where north was, but it wouldn't tell you where home was. You'd have to know where home was by some other means. You could help use the compass, could help you keep your bearings when you're navigating. And I think the evidence is that birds, like pigeons and migrating birds, can use a compass sense to keep them on track once they know where to go.
Mm.
If you disrupt the magnetic field, you can confuse them.
Uh-huh.
But it's not the main primary means by which they know where home is.
There are some who are concerned that the bird's confusion may mean that the magnetic field is shifting, and there is some scientific evidence indicating the shift of our magnetic field, possibly even its flipping. That process has begun.
I don't think it's shifting that much. I mean, it's measured every year. It's currently wandering around in Queen Elizabeth Island, Canada.
Yes,
at the North Magnetic Pole.
That's right.
I mean, it always wanders a bit anyway. I don't think that this is because of that. I think that these disruptions that we're seeing now, insofar as they're due to electromagnetic disturbances, are probably caused much more by the huge increase in the number of phone masts and radio and TV transmissions and satellite transmissions. We've created a huge electromagnetic smog around the Earth. Especially when you get very powerful radio transmitter masts, those are known to affect birds. So I think we're seeing... there's also an effect of sunspots and solar storms.
Yes.
On the sun.
And maybe somebody's out there testing some sort of electromagnetic... weapon.
That could be possible. That's a possibility as well. But I think just the regular increase in electromagnetic fields caused by phone and radio transmissions can go a long way to explaining the increase in birds getting lost in recent years. So
your voice may be modulating them out of the sky right now.
Yes, it might indeed. The fact is, though, that most migratory birds are still finding their way in spite of all this. I mean, here in England, we've still got swallows and swifts that migrate here from across the Sahara from Africa every year, and they're still arriving. So although there have been some cases that where they've gone astray, the vast majority of migrations are still going on perfectly normally, and the majority of homing pigeons are still finding their way home.
All right. I wish now to allow the audience to ask a couple of questions. So I'm going to pause for a second, and I'm going to remind all of you who are going to be calling to ask the professor a question, hopefully, in the next moments, that he's in Great Britain and we are here. There is a natural satellite delay, so it's best when you get online if you ask your question and then just stop, pause, and wait for an answer. Otherwise, people tend to overtalk each other. So with that in mind, let's take a couple of calls here and see what we've got. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Professor Rupert Sheldrake. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Where are you, sir?
Oh, I'm calling under the clear desert skies of Ogden, Utah.
Ogden, Utah. All right. Well, yes. Welcome to the program, and if you have a question for the professor, let her rip.
All right. Thanks, Art. First of all, when we talk about the human psychic responses and things like that, I can't help but think about the human aura in general. And my question was for your guest was the build at the beginning of the program he was speaking about. I was wondering if these might just be like your aura interacting with someone else's aura who
right.
you are observing from across the room, and in a sense that's how you feel them stirring you.
All right, all right. All right, sir, hold on. That's a very, very, very good question. Professor, there are a lot of people who claim to be able to see an aura. Something surrounding living things has been brilliant photography of auras. Auras do seem, it seems like they are something, or in your research, do you think they are nothing?
Well, I think they're a name for something that one could call, which I would call a field.
Mm-hmm.
I think that organisms have fields around them. I think we have fields around us. And most people don't see them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see auras myself. There are some people who say they do see them. And I think what's happening is that they're somehow picking up on the fields around people or animals. So I think that the way what people see when they're seeing an aura is interpreting the field in their own way. I've done experiments on this with, I did some in Cambridge with, oddly enough, with John Cleese, the British actor and comedian. We got some psychics there who said they could see auras. There was a group of people there. We sent them out of the room, and then we asked them in one by one to describe my aura and John Cleese's aura.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave, each one of them gave a description of our auras, and we sent them to another room. The next one came in. Their descriptions were quite different. They were different colors, different sizes, different shapes. So I think that some of what people are seeing in the aura is what they're adding subjectively to something that may well be there. It's their interpretation.
Interesting. All right. What about the Curlian photography of auras? Do you believe it? What's being seen there actually is a depiction of the field we're talking about right now, or do you think that's baloney?
I just don't know is the answer. The Curlian photographs are based on a high-voltage electric discharge. They're very sensitive to moisture. If you put a piece of damp blotting paper, you'll get an aura around it because the water vapor from the edge of the blotting paper will show up on the Curlian photo. If you put your hand on a cold pane of glass, you'll get a kind of aura of steam or condensation around it. If you photograph that, you'd say, that's the aura. How much of this is really an aura or a field that's being photographed, and how much is simply due to moisture given off by the thing that's being photographed?
Well, it rather sounds like you've concluded that that is, in fact, what is being photographed.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to believe that Curlian photography really was picking up what I call morphic fields. I mean, I'd be excited if that were the case. But the evidence I've seen hasn't impressed me that that it really is picking up the field. I think it might be just an artifact from the moisture. It's just a doubt in my mind, you know. My sort of standard scientific thinking kicks in when I'm confronted with this kind of evidence. And,
you know, that's why I asked. I wanted a straight-on answer, and you gave it. Wild card line, you're on the air with Professor Sheldrake. Hi.
Good evening. This is Jeffrey calling from Alta Loma, listening to the radio smog from... Hi.
Yeah, okay.
And I have a brief premonition story, and I'd like the professor to comment on how he would classify the story.
All right.
In December of 1996, January of 1997, I was busily driving my commute and going to work every day, and I had this feeling that I was going to get hit on the left side of my car.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had a couple dreams along that line, and sure enough, about the second week of January in a rainstorm, somebody ran a stop sign and blam, hit me on the left side of my car, and it all just fell into place. So I was wondering how he might classify that experience.
Mm-hmm. Professor?
Well, I mean, that does sound like a possible case of precognition. I mean, it's a bit like Art's story of knowing someone was going to slam into his car outside his house.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's certainly possible, and I think quite a number of these stories do concern cars and car accidents.
That's because we care a lot about cars here in America,
yes.
And I know in Britain you share a similar love for these machines.
Well, I don't have one myself, oddly enough. But
you don't?
I know a lot of people are passionate about them, yes.
They are. They become attached to them, like family members.
Yes. I think it's possible. I think the best thing really with precognitions and a lot of these phenomena is to keep a log. You know, what the skeptics say is, well, you forget all the times you're wrong and
quite
you
right.
remember the times you're right.
Quite right.
The best way to deal with that particular point, which is a reasonable point, is to keep a log of premonitions or precognitions or of possible psychic phenomena. And then you can see how many times you're right and wrong. And if there's hundreds of times when you're wrong and only a few you're right, it could be a chance thing. My own feeling is that, and in fact, when people have kept logs, that the success rate is, in fact, quite impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for anyone who has precognitions on a regular basis, keeping a log is just a simple diary or notebook is the best way to deal with it.
Professor, have you noticed that skeptics seem to have some of the worst personalities in the world? I mean, they're the nastiest, most people who are just, they will annoy you just within minutes.
Well, there are certainly skeptics like that, but I mean, I know non-skeptics who are annoying too.
But I mean, it's a religious experience for them.
Some of them. There are some people, you know, among my scientific colleagues, there are a lot of people who I'd consider reasonable skeptics, who raise reasonable points. But there's a kind of bigot, there's a kind of zealous bigot, you know, the kind of people who would have belonged to the Inquisition in the Middle Ages.
Yes.
That kind of person is attracted to these militant skeptic movements. And they're completely irrational, they think they're completely right, they have a crusading zeal. And they're, in fact, completely irrational, even though they claim to be in favor of science and reason.
Mm-hmm.
But in my experience, that's a vociferous minority. But most, within the scientific community, most people are not like that.
It's just they're so memorable.
They're so memorable. They make a lot of noise, and they're self-publicists. They like getting in the media. But I often give talks in scientific institutions or science departments in universities, and I would say that people like that are probably only 1 or 2% within the science community. A lot of the prominent media skeptics are conjurers, magicians, people who've got actually no scientific qualifications.
So you sometimes meet with these people on television shows and have challenges and that sort of thing?
Yes, I have... I challenged them to debates, actually, and one of them accepted. I mentioned earlier with one of Britain's leading skeptics, I had a public debate with him with a High Court judge in the chair to to ensure a level playing field.
Well, that I want to hear about that, so hold it right there. Get the courts in Great Britain involved, huh? This should be worth hearing about. Well, all right. Professor Rupert Sheldrake is my guest. It is a, well, it's an early Monday morning, actually, and I'm Art Bell. In the nighttime, which is where we reside, you must be just like me. We'll be right back.
By news.
News on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks.
I'm Sam Bodka in the KFI News Center. Two people in L.A. County have been killed on the freeways this Labor Day weekend. That's two fewer than this time last year. Highway Patrol spokesman Carlo Quintero says busting a lot of drunk drivers may be the reason for the low number.
Statewide, we've arrested already 948 drivers and paired drivers. In L.A. County alone, we've arrested 194. So that means we're out there and we're arresting these people, taking them off the roads who can potentially cause an accident.
22 people statewide have been killed on the freeway since Friday night. That's eight more than this time last year. West Nile virus is expected to be less of a killer in California in the future. UCLA's Dr. Robert Kim Farley says that's based on the history of the disease in Africa. He says there are a few deaths from West Nile in countries where the disease has been around for decades.
People are immune much earlier in their lives, and therefore when they get to older age, when you have higher chances of severity of complications of disease, they are protected because of their earlier immunity.
He says thousands of Californians may have already been infected without knowing it and are now immune also. Most cases of West Nile produce no symptoms. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 1:31. I'm Sam Botta in the KFI News Center.
Traffic presented by Lexus Dealers.
Torrance, 405 South before Crenshaw Boulevard, report of a large truck bed liner in the left lane. South LA, 105 East Connector Road to the 110 South. They had a stalled vehicle there blocking that transition road. Similar story in downtown LA, 10 East Connector Road to the 110 South. Stalled car there. A transition road is out of action. This traffic report is brought to you by Six Flags Magic Mountain. Get amazing savings at Six Flags Magic Mountain tickets only at Ralph's. Pay just $24.99 for an adult ticket and get a children's 3 to 11 ticket absolutely free. I'm Mark Kilmer in the KFI Lexus Dealers Traffic Center.
These guys get big money for state fairs.
Wait, but doesn't that usually mean it's the end of your career?
No, I would love to do a state fair.
You know,
I don't know.
What would you do?
I have no
idea. Fair circuit permanently. That would be
fine.
I'm
telling you.
Bill Handel, this morning, 5 to 9.
On KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Why would you pay about $24 a month for AOL dial-up for your computer, for your connection to the Internet, when you can get DSL Extreme DSL service for $26.95 a month, a couple of bucks a month more? And the difference is night and day. With DSL, you don't wait for anything. You don't wait to dial in. You don't wait for the downloads. I mean, they're virtually instantaneous. It's an astonishing way of using the computer. If you ever use DSL, you can see the difference instantly. And with DSL Extreme, you get all the bells and whistles. You don't tie up the phone lines. You get a great spam protection. There's no setup fee. The modem is free, 24-hour free tech support, 10 email addresses, 10 website, no pop-up ads, banner ads, no unwanted emails because of the spam protection. I've been using DSL Extreme, my office, for 4.5 years now, my home for 1.5 years. DSL Extreme, boy, what a way to go. $26.95 a month. I mean, how do you beat that? DSLExtreme.com on the net. Call them at 866-2-GET-NET. 866-2-GET-NET.
Casino.
Miss out. Be sure to join Casino Morongo's Winners Club now. You can use your card every time you play and get great benefits like cash back, gas discounts, and a whole lot more. It's free and easy to use. Magnificent new casino resort and spa will be open in December, but you can make your reservations right now. Call 1-888-MORONGO for details. Why stay or play anywhere else?
At Casino Morongo, it pays to play. At Casino Morongo, it's
gamble responsibly.
Most trusted voice in talk radio.
Rush Limbaugh, today 9 to noon, KFI AM 640.
The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from East of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From West of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Indeed so. Professor Sheldrake is in London. That's a long ways away. So as I pointed out a little while ago, when you get on the line, get to ask your question, sort of ask it in its entirety and then pause for the answer. Otherwise, it gets kind of confusing. It is nevertheless an excellent connection, which we'll resume in a moment. A sale on the Free Play Plus Beijing radio. No matter where you live, eventually there's going to be a power failure. Smile the next time the lights go out, turn on your Free Play Plus, and tune in the news or entertainment. It'll give you a lot of peace of mind. Here are the benefits. No need to hunt for batteries. The only wind-up radio with a reliable spring-type generator. Just set it in the sun. You'll keep it charged all the time. No sun? Not a problem. Just wind it up for radio or light. Picks up AM, FM, and shortwave, and the detachable LED light makes a great area or reading light. Get your Beijing Free Play Radio on sale now for $99.95, shipping and handling included. So, don't wait a moment. Give the Seacrane Company a call on Monday at 1-800-522-8863. That number again for the Beijing Free Play Radio or a free Seacrane catalog, 800-522-8863. And on the web at ccradio.com, the Seacrane Company. Discover something new today.
Are you losing your hair? Is that bald spot getting bigger? Is your hair looking thinner? Why aren't you using Avacor, the hair growth treatment that has helped thousands of people just like you regrow their hair?
I am 39 years old. I've been slowly balding over the last 10 years. Thanks to Avacor, my hair is coming back and I couldn't be more excited.
The best product that I've tried.
Avacor is the product of the 21st century.
If you're losing your hair and haven't tried Avacor yet, how about a free month supply? We're giving away a free month of Avacor with all of today's orders. Avacor is proven to successfully stop hair loss and regrow hair.
Come on, guys. Call now for your free month supply of Avacor. Call 1-800-475-1420. That's 1-800-475-1420. Wouldn't it be great to have more hair? Call 1-800-475-1420. 1-800-475-1420.
A lot of people out there, I think, after listening through the weekend and so many programs we've done like this, really will want to follow up by reading some of the professor's materials. So, Professor, if you could recommend a book that people ought to jump on right now of the ones you've written, what would you most want them to read?
The one most relevant to what we've been discussing on the sixth sense, telepathy, sense of being stared at, premonitions, and the extended mind is my most recent one, The Sense of Being Stared At and Other Aspects of the Extended Mind. The one on morphic resonance, the best summary of that, and collective memory, morphic fields, is The Presence of the Past.
Mm-hmm. But the Sense of Being Stared At, available now, Amazon.com, that sort of place, or?
Oh, yes, yes. Uh-huh. It's in shops, it's on Amazon. It came out a few months ago in paperback, so I've forgotten the price, but it's quite reasonably priced.
All right. Excellent. I hope you sell many, and I'm sure you will, because a lot of people are beginning to have the light bulb go on over their brain. Eric of Columbia, Maryland, asks a really good question that we couldn't let you get away without answering. There are a number of scientific studies now, quite scientific actually, of distant healing and of healing effects of prayer of people completely unaware that they're being prayed for. And so what's your take on this?
Well, I've been tracking this literature with much interest. I've never done any personal research on these prayer studies.
Mm-hmm.
They're well-designed and well-constructed studies. They follow a kind of standard double-blind procedure. Some mm-hmm. people are prayed for, other people are not.
Right, right.
Some of them have shown very significant effects. I think it's very important that people have started studying prayer in this experimental way, because after all, millions of people pray on a regular basis, and the majority of Americans, the majority of British people pray. And what's going on? I think that one of the things that my own research shows, and telepathy research in general, is that if you form an intention, if you're thinking about a particular person, if you form an intention related to that person, your intention can reach out and affect them just telepathically without prayer. I mean, I'm now talking about establishing a connection. A dog can know when its owner's intending to come home from many miles away. So we can measure this effect. We can actually observe the dog responding. So we know that our intentions reach out. A person can pick up your intention to phone them on the telephone. They start thinking about you, and when you ring, they say, "That's amazing, I was just thinking about you." I think that in prayer, one of the things that can happen is that when we focus our intention on another person, no matter how far away they are, that establishes a kind of link, which is normally the basis of telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
I think prayer is more than just telepathy. I think it involves an extra healing power that I don't pretend to understand, but I mean, insofar as people are invoking God, the Holy Spirit, the power of the saints, or whatever, in their prayers, they're adding something in to this mere telepathic connection, but I think that provides a channel through which the prayer can work.
Would you be disturbed, Professor, if you found out that that one prayer group and its results were equal to another group which did not pray to the name of God that something happened, but nevertheless concentrated on an event occurring, a healing specifically, and they had the same results as the people who invoked the name of God? How would you treat that information?
Well, my own view would be that God has many names. And, you know, we, in the Christian world, we think of God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. I mean, we have our own particular way of thinking about it. Muslims have different names. Hindus have different names. And the Hindus have many names for different gods or different aspects of the one God.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't get too hung up on what particular name is used, because I think that we're dealing with powers and forces that are way beyond the human level of consciousness.
So from our point of view, then it's God either way.
Well, from my point of view, I would say it's probably God either way. If people are praying to a higher power that's basically benevolent and does good, it doesn't to me matter a lot what they call it, because different religions call it different names.
Okay, that's a good answer. First time caller line, you're on the air with Professor Sheldrake. Hi.
Hi there.
Where are you?
San Diego.
San Diego, okay.
Yeah.
And so, what have you?
Well, I wanted to know how I would... Well, first of all, I'm a seer, is what I call myself. And I'm really good at finding things.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, if they lose something, I can find it. I mean, it's strange.
That is strange, but I've heard of it, even experienced it. Yes.
Yeah, well, I've even found like an earring in a silverware drawer and strange stuff like that.
Okay.
Anyway, my question is, how would I get involved with a parapsychologist that does experiments? I would like to be...
tested?
Yeah, because then it would help me also.
All right. It's a good question. If somebody thinks they have a very strong ability like that young lady... Should she go be... Would it be a good thing to go and get tested, Professor?
Well, it depends on the kind of ability. I mean, certainly finding things is a really interesting ability, and that's something that would be fairly easy to test. If I lived in San Diego, I'd, you know, offer to run some tests myself. I live in London, England, so I'm 6,000 miles away, so I can't really... Well, I think it's... Yes, I think it is a good idea to be tested. The only thing is that scientific tests are often rather unimaginative and flat-footed and you know, they may seem not true to the phenomenon. But I think finding lost objects is a clear... You know, we're dealing with a clear phenomenon. You're right or you're wrong. The object is or is not where it is.
That's right.
And I would have thought it'd be something that could be quite easy to test and be very fascinating to test. Yes, I don't know of any parapsychologists working in San Diego, but there are certainly some working in Northern California. I think it would be really interesting to test that.
Now, here's an interesting question for you, Professor. Do you think that there are people in the world with unique... way above average abilities in some of the areas that we've been talking about who are well aware of their talent, but for obvious reasons, because they don't want to be locked up like a lab rat and tested or cut up or probed, they keep this ability to themselves. Is that a logical conclusion?
Oh, I think there are a lot of people who have these abilities, and usually they can't keep them totally to themselves, but they're often known within their families, for example. There are a lot of people who, within the family, are known to be highly psychic and who people would listen to their premonitions or their warnings or their telepathic intuitions. So I think this is quite common, actually. And then there are people, of course, who do actually make a living doing it, and they become professional psychics. And you know, I'm sure some of them are very good, and I'm sure some of them are not very good. It's when people start charging money for it, then, you know, one begins to be a bit suspicious as to, is it all genuine, is it just a money-making thing?
Yes, one...
I think the lady who's just rung is particularly interesting, though, finding things is, you know, you're right or you're wrong, and it works or it doesn't work. I think that's a wonderful ability to have. And
certainly very testable.
Very testable.
Well, I'm not sure what's on that line, but we can't deal with it. For east of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hello. Greetings to you.
Greetings. Where are you?
I'm in southern Manitoba, Canada. This is Margaret.
Okay, Margaret. Welcome. What's up?
Well, I had an experience with telepathy. I met this person actually hiding in my house. This is about 7 years ago that I found him. And it was a young person, and he started using telepathy to communicate with me. And it was perfectly clear for a while, and then it was just after I started to realize this person was involved in crime and criminal activity, I was blocking it out, and
wait a minute, hold on a sec. I'm curious. This person was living in your house for how long?
Well, I found out later that he had been hiding there since June of 1992.
And that was how long at that point?
A little over close to 5 years.
5 years. Somebody hid in your house and you didn't know it?
Well, actually, I did. I kind of suspected somebody had been around, and I noticed little things.
Little things.
Yeah, actually, quite a few things. I got quite the story for you, Art, if you want to get to me off the air.
Yeah, anyway.
The question is to the professor, and thank you, of course, for taking my call. This person is still trying to use telepathy to communicate with me and remote viewing, and I don't want this, and I want to block it out. And, you know, like I said, this person was involved, is involved in criminal activity, and I'd like to find a way to...
break the connection.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's very clear. All right, so, Professor Sheldrake, there are people who believe... that curses can be put on people, that they can be spied upon psychically, they can be attacked psychically.
Mm.
There are people who specialize in stopping these attacks. And then, of course, like this young lady, there are people who feel they are being attacked psychically. You care to comment on all of that? Pretty fringy stuff, but...
Well, I think it's possible, and I think that... You know, in traditional cultures, this has been a widespread thing. I mean, you go to Brazil or somewhere like that, and there's lots of people who think they've been cursed and lots of people who hire people to do something about it.
That's very right, yes.
Take it on. I mean, it's a world I don't know very much about, and I wouldn't presume to give advice on this particular one. You know, I'd suggest consulting a counselor or an expert, because... we get into an area where it's hard to disentangle what's really going on from what might be in one's own imagination, and it's a really tricky area.
It is, but it there are parts of it, certainly, that might bear investigation because...
Oh, certainly. I mean, I take seriously the possibility of these things happening, and I think they can be a real serious nuisance in people's lives. I mean, mm-hmm. a danger, indeed.
Yes.
But it's hard to know in a given case, you know, what's really going on without properly going into this kind of whole psychological background and so on. And so
that's quite all right, but you don't...
an answer I could give right now.
You don't dismiss it out of hand, to be sure.
Oh, no, don't dismiss it out of hand, no.
All right, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Professor Sheldrake. Hi.
Hi. The intuitions and all are a constant part of my life. I've had them forever. And also, I deal a lot with animals, where I've dealt with rescued animals and special needs animals for years. And I also run a lost and found and counseling line here in Arizona. And we see the normal spikes where animals will get lost because, of course, fireworks or storms, that sort of thing. But I had never really done anything checking, you know, events that had happened. And I wouldn't be surprised if animals sometimes even pick up on the earthquakes over in California. But I have noticed we've taken in special needs animals where someone was dying or something, and all of a sudden I'll see the animal moping around some and realize that something's going on, and I'll confirm that the owner is in the process of or has just passed away.
Yeah.
And we've had many, many situations like that. So this is fascinating tonight to link all this. But I was wondering if the professor had had any dealings like that, and I certainly am going to start tracking a lot more of the unexplained spikes in our lost and found also.
All right. I very much appreciate the call. And, Professor, yes, animals, I too believe, have psychic ability, perhaps beyond that of human beings, and she was reporting animals that were in mourning for their owners, in mourning. I mean, that seems such a human... emotion to be in mourning, but it's not just human, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. No, I mean, there's hundreds of stories of dogs that pine away after their owners have died and so on, even commit suicide. But the point I think she was making is one that sometimes animals know when their owner has had an accident or has died. And I have a huge database of cases of unexplained abilities of animals. And one of the categories we have is of animals that know when the owner's had an accident or died at a distance. We have several hundred cases of this kind, well-documented cases. a typical example would be here in England. There was a woman who went on holiday with her husband. They left their dog with a neighbor. And in the middle of the night one day when they were away, the dog started howling, and they couldn't find any reason why the dog was howling. There was nothing wrong with it. They couldn't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning there was a call came from the woman saying that her husband had had a heart attack and died the night before in Ireland. And the dog started howling at the time he died. And, of course, the person looking after the dog couldn't possibly have known that.
No, of course not.
So this is the kind of thing that there are so many cases like this that I have no doubt this really happens. Of course, there are people who pick up when a loved one has died. They get a dream or they get an impression or a feeling. But dogs and cats and other animals seem to be able to pick this up. And I think if we think of telepathy as involving a bond, it normally happens between people who have a bond. The bond can be thought of as a bit like an invisible elastic band. And if one of the people dies or has a serious accident, then you can see that it would affect the other at a distance.
All of this is, if all of this is true, and it certainly seems to be, then it should affect all of our world views, the way we view everything, our relationship with each other, with animals. It should affect our entire world view. This is such an important area of understanding, and yet it's not accepted quickly at all by either the mainstream press or people in general, is it?
Well, I think that most people in general do accept it because they've experienced it, especially things like telephone telepathy or the sense of being stared at. But they're usually shy to talk about it in public because there is a long-standing taboo against these topics in our society, which the mainstream so-called serious press enforces or certainly observes, and within the academic world these taboos are very strong. But nevertheless, I think these things are quite common, even in modern America and modern Britain and the whole modern world. So I certainly think they lead to a different worldview as well. I mean, I think we need a different worldview anyway, moving towards a more holistic worldview and a world in which we see things as much more interconnected. And the existence of these phenomena fits very well with what I think is a paradigm shift that's happening anyway within science.
It is. It is. It is beginning to happen. There's no.
It is beginning
question.
To happen, and the old certainties are definitely getting less certain, and the old prestige of kind of dogmatic scientism, this kind of science as a religion, this is on the decline. I think the things are opening up in quite an exciting way.
Well, you certainly have opened them up in quite an exciting way for us this morning. We're out of time. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on. What time is it there in London?
It's just before 10 o'clock in the morning.
Mid-morning. And the end of the morning for me. Professor, thank you so very much.
A pleasure.
And good night from this side of the pond.